top of the morning to you all. A morning warning. I think we should get this right out. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. You might be getting an alert on your phone right now. You might be hearing sirens in your village. There is a statewide tornado exercise going on today at 10 a.m. We were forewarned of this warning.
Yes, we were.
And are you hearing any sirens downtown?
I didn't hear anything. Is it a silent warning?
No, silent but deadly.
Is it a silent but deadly, Wendy?
I am a silent
there
but deadly
should
Wendy.
Be, there should be a drill for that, because when that happens, all heck breaks loose. So,
hey, I claim it.
We're on a silent but deadly warning. This is sponsored by the Van Camp Pork and Bean people.
There was now this is huge news because I am deathly afraid of tornadoes. Seriously,
you said that in the past.
I would crawl over your body
and get
out this door, and I don't know where I'd go. Do we have a bunker?
Yeah, there is a bunker in the back.
Eat it.
We got a stifle. It's hidden in the back, but there's
you know where it is?
Yeah, they told me where it was.
What
they didn't
do
tell
I have
you.
To do to?
They said they were only telling select members of the staff. I don't know what that means.
What do you want? I'll do whatever you want.
No.
Tell me.
No.
I need the bunker.
It's not that. It's a moderately sized bunker. It's only big enough for five or six. So, good luck. I'm sure you'll find something.
You are so mean.
You'll
to
be
me.
Fine.
I
You're
look
a survivor.
Out for you all the time.
You're a survivor.
I care deeply about you. You're so mean
People
to me.
People always say, in 1,000 years, you'll have Twinkies, cockroaches, and Wendy. You'll still be here. You're going to be fine. You have nothing to worry about.
Well, if you heard a siren in your town, or if you got an alert on your phone, it is just a test. It's a statewide tornado exercise. March 1st.
There's no actual giant statewide tornado.
No, but if we weren't telling people this, and you got a warning, an alert on your phone, statewide, that is the biggest tornado known to man.
That would be a large twister.
Way to whip out the meteorological terms.
You're welcome.
If I saw that with the way the weather is these days, it wouldn't
right.
put it past me.
But does it say when you get a text in a case like this where it is just a test, it's a drill,
Yeah, but you see tornado warning and you panic.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess.
But we were told that sirens were supposed to go off, as we've learned from Tom Skilling and Andy Avalos. You can't have a tornado in the city. People say the big buildings in the lake make it not come here, make it an undesirable environment for a tornado. That's not true.
Right. Anything can happen.
So just a warning about the warning. There is no warning.
Do they have, they should have... And maybe they do. I don't know. But they should have a conference of all the top weather people that we know and love from the TV. They should all get together and decide major weather-related things. Do they do that?
Like what?
I don't know. But like Tom Skilling should be there. All your favorites. The guy who looks like Fred Flintstone on Channel 32, he should be there.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who I mean?
I just call him Fred Flintstone.
I think he may be Fred Flintstone.
Bill...
No, it's Mark Strell. That's the guy that looks like Fred Flintstone.
Oh, I don't even
he
know
He should be there. Jim Tillman should be there. Any of our favorite weather people from the TV should be at a giant conference to decide weather-related things.
Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel, because I love
him. He should be there.
Him.
He should definitely be
in
there.
In a wind tunnel? Have you seen that video? That's pretty
yes.
fantastic.
Yes,
he
I forgot about that.
He tied himself down
right.
and put on goggles.
Right. He should definitely be there. But wouldn't that be a fun evening, if not weekend, of weather people sharing
for
their
social
craft? No,
stuff?
Just to make big weather-related decisions. I don't know what
powwow?
They would decide. Yeah, you call it the weather powwow of 2016.
State of the weather address?
Yep. Yep.
I would like to be in the audience of that, if there was an audience, because I am a closet, well, not even a closet, I'm a weather geek.
Right. Well, you could be there. You could sit with Mark Strell, and then when he orders the ribs, it could tip your car over, and he could say yabba dabba doo, because that's what he does. You know who I mean, right? I love that guy. He does weekend weather on Channel 32, but every time he's on, I say, God, I haven't seen the Flintstones in a long time. I got to watch the Flintstones.
What's his name?
I think it's Mark Strell. I'm pretty sure his name is Mark Strell.
I don't watch news on the weekends.
Not at all?
I'm never around to watch
news.
I'm trying to catch up on all
the
good TV. He does look like Fred Flintstone.
Doesn't he? A little bit.
Strehl, Fox 32.
Yeah, that's him.
Become Facebook friends with him. Tell him Bill says he looks like Fred Flintstone.
He does the yabba dabba dew point warnings. to let us know. Yeah, there's a picture of him.
He's better looking than Fred. And he's got better clothes.
But if they were going to cast a movie, and there's already been a movie or two about the Flintstones, but if they were only going to cast weather people as the Flintstones, that's your Fred Flintstone, is that guy.
Who was Fred in the... Was it? It wasn't
Mark
John...
Mark Addy.
Oh, yeah. That was cute.
John Goodman in the first one, Mark Addy in the second one.
There were two?
Yeah, they did two of them. Viva Rock Vegas.
Hollywood's officially run out of movies, haven't they?
Yeah. I think
no ideas anymore.
I'm pretty sure that signified the beginning of the end. Yeah, it actually did.
All right, well, no tornado warning, just so you know.
What they canceled it?
No, I think it might have happened.
No, yeah, we were getting alerts. You see it
you
on your
were?
Crawl?
Yeah,
did
I saw
you see your crawl there? And yeah. I mean, they were going to...
I got something stuck in my crawl.
I know.
I know it's cross.
Permaseal can help with that.
They are already helping me. Thank you very much. Yes, we saw the crawl, but I really thought we were supposed to hear the sirens.
All sorts of warning sirens.
And
yeah.
In the suburban areas, they may be hearing it. This like spans out to Rockford and parts of Northwest Indiana. So I just thought we could say it's... The weather is so volatile. It changes on a dime.
Yes, it does.
There are tornadoes in places where there's never been tornadoes before, and we're, you know, around Tornado Alley. I just thought we should say something.
Can I take a moment to recognize one of our fine engineers here, a man named Bill Murdoch, who speaks in a language that I don't understand.
It turns me
on. He comes in. I know. I can see it in you. When he comes in, he tells us technical things. And I don't understand any of it, but he was explaining to us. And anytime he explains anything technical to us, like at the beginning of the conversation, I don't understand much of it. By the time it's done, I don't understand any of it.
I know.
But I just keep nodding and I go, that's great.
You need a safe word. My safe word with him is coaxial. Murdoch, coaxial.
He always tells me it's like he'll do something and then just to play along, like he'll explain why something isn't working. And I'll go, well, what do you think it is? And he go, it's the G7 condensers. And I'll go, yeah, of course it's the G7 condensers.
And he's always got this smile on his face. Like
he's adorable.
Like it's fun.
It right. is fun.
Your foot's on fire. Well, I'll tell you why.
Right. Or you could put it out. Or I could tell you why. All right, well, tell
it's
me why.
It's a really
then.
Cool thing. See, it's fire.
Right. Well, he was telling us about this test today. He was warning us with, as Steve mentioned, a huge smile on his face to let us know.
He always smiles. Very pleasant.
We have nothing to fear. It's a fake tornado. But then he was explaining there's a reciprocal effect between here and Indiana, and they had to somehow let Indiana know that we were going to do this test.
Because people, it's Northwest Indiana.
Our signal
carries
into Indiana.
Well, it carries into all states, so.
Yeah. We have to tell all the 49 other states.
Hey, Alabama.
Right.
Don't go running for the hills.
Right. Here comes the wind scooper. It's a fake wind scooper, folks of that area. It's not a real wind scooper.
No, Donald Trump has taken over the program.
All right, let's take a quick break. Any tests that are happening? And there are more, right, throughout the day? Do we have another test?
Well, we just have the EAS test, the Emergency right. Alert System, at 10:20. So we're going to get it all done. We should have just started at 11.
Yeah. All right.
But you will not,
people not too late.
You will right. not be charged for this part of the show. This part of the show is free. You will not be charged.
All right.
So don't panic. More show coming your way in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right. There's a lot going on in today's show. One of the things you may want to stay tuned for later on at 11:35, we have people in from the Midwest Independent Film Festival on the first Tuesday of every month, and that's today.
Mike McNamara?
Mike McNamara.
Our monthly friend?
Our monthly friend, Mike McNamara, will be by.
Flo and is his parenthetical name.
That's right. That's correct. And there's a film about the dangers of tasers, things we didn't know about tasers, and it's just a little bit chilling. I mean, it seems on paper you go, well, of course they can't be that good for you when you think about the electrical shock that's going through your body. As it turns out, it's even worse than that. So there's a documentary that kind of explores that a bit.
And hasn't our police departments in many places just been armed with tons of tasers?
Yeah, they've increased the number of tasers. Yeah, so the timing on this couldn't be better.
Right, but also in their defense, remember, the police are under huge fire, if you will, for
shooting
people.
Right.
And tasers are a way to not shoot people.
Right, but they could still die. Let's do a little EAS test and see if we pass. Hope you studied. Isn't there a closing announcement? This has been a test.
Or credits. They should run credits at the end of the test. Let you know who worked on it.
And it used to be the EBS test. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I miss those days. That was fun. Emergency. That's when the test meant something.
Broadcast system, and now right. It's emergency alert system.
Right.
Why'd they change it?
I don't know. Everything changes.
I'm sure Bill Murdoch will come down with the answer. Be ready.
It's one of those G7 condensers, Wendy. You know
coaxial,
that.
Coaxial. Yep. All right. So tasers, we were talking about it. And Steve, you're right. You know, guns will... I don't know if you have a better chance of surviving a taser. I guess technically you
do. Oh, sure. Than a gunshot? Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. There are some... If not instant effects, there are residual effects, one would think, because your heart operates on electrical current and impulses, and that's what you're getting this electricity jolted through your system.
Well, later on, as we mentioned, the filmmaker who made this movie will be on to explain himself and the film, and we only saw a brief minute or so of it, but it looks interesting.
Looks so that'll chilling.
It looks chilling.
Electrifying.
It does. Also, as Steve will take you through this all day, it's Super Tuesday.
Super!
It's just amazing.
I didn't realize until last night that this really is one of the heaviest predictors for who the next president will be.
Hence the name, Super Tuesday?
Yeah.
I think a quarter of the Republican delegates at stake tonight. And, you know, so much of these campaigns are all about expectation and as old George said, Big Mo.
Yeah.
You know, and the Donald Trump could put it to bed tonight. Hillary Clinton could end it tonight.
She's suspending her.
No.
She could end it. That scared me.
Well, no, she does very well. She, you know, Bernie has been focusing on like Vermont, Minnesota,
there's
Massachusetts,
some states, Steve,
Oklahoma.
That they were pointing out yesterday there are some states that he just basically conceded.
He's got a 50-point lead in a couple of states in the South, but he's banking on Massachusetts, and she's been doing pretty well there. So if she can beat him in one of the states where he's been investing, it could be, you know, he might not leave the race tomorrow, but this could go a long way towards sealing it today.
Yep.
And we have some things, everything you need to know about Super Tuesday, because I'll be honest with you, I didn't know what was so super about it. So I had to look it up, and there are a lot of people that I brought this up to, and they're like, I'm not really sure. It is scheduled for March 1st, of course, refers to the day when a dozen states and one territory.
That's your American Samoa. Right?
Why are they involved in it? Just because it has the American...
It's part of the creed of America to be in on the process of voting. However, as I pointed out yesterday, it's backwards because there's no electoral college in American Samoa or in the Philippines, even though they're U.S. territories. So even though they make something of a big deal, well, a medium-sized deal about it, it really doesn't matter because without the electoral college's support, which there is none, it's for nothing. And no, I've talked to the most learned people I can find about this, and nobody can explain it.
It is pretty weird.
It's backwards.
Well, the largest number of states hold their nominating contest today. Super Tuesday, unofficial name for a Tuesday during the presidential primary. Which states are voting on Super Tuesday? Alabama. So it's a good thing we told them that their tornado warning, what'd you call it?
I don't remember. I can't remember.
You choose to edit yourself. Good job. Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, and Virginia will hold contests for both Republicans and Democrats. Republicans in Alaska will hold caucuses. Democrats in Colorado will hold their caucuses as well, and Democrats in American Samoa are also holding their nominating contest. So just the Democrats?
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right.
Remember, the primaries are party functions.
Yes.
It's where the parties are choosing their candidates.
Yeah, yeah. Can I ask, Steve, really quickly, each state handles this differently. Is that a good thing or is that not a good thing?
Well, again, it goes to the party. So, you know, the Illinois Democratic Party sets up its rules. The Oklahoma Democratic Party sets up its differently. You know, just the way
they choose.
So it's
not necessarily good or bad. It's just different.
Yeah. They're choosing their delegates. What we're essentially doing today are choosing delegates for the Republican and Democratic conventions in the summer.
And then what the phrase superdelegate is thrown around from time to time. What separates a superdelegate from your standard delegate?
The Democrats have many more superdelegates than the Republicans. They are party officials. They're elected officials. You know, Bill Clinton, when he leaves the White House, gets a superdelegate card forever.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a member of Congress, I think you're a superdelegate. So if you remember the Democratic National Committee, so they are automatic delegates to the convention. They do not have to be elected.
Okay.
They are going, and that's where Hillary Clinton has a huge lead with superdelegates.
Oh, okay.
And there are 661 Republican delegates that will be allocated based on Super Tuesday, 865 delegates for Democrats.
So that is a big day.
And how are Super Tuesday delegates distributed? Under party rules, no state holding its primary before March 15th can do a winner-take-all allocation of delegates, meaning that all Super Tuesday states will divide up their delegates in some way. In some states, that's close to directly proportional to voter results, whereas others have a winner-take-most allocation structure. I don't even know what I'm reading.
It does complicate things, doesn't it?
Seriously.
It really does.
Some states go by congressional district, and then you have to, on the Republican side, get 15 or 20% to be considered viable in that district. So, say Ted Cruz gets 14% in a district,
yeah,
he would get no delegates because you'd need to get above the floor in order to be awarded any.
Well, what does Al Gore think about the electoral votes?
I'm guessing he's not the biggest fan.
But doesn't that prove to you that it's just kind of...
You're confusing things. That you're talking about the Electoral College, and that's in the
as
general...
opposed to
oh,
delegates.
In the election.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I am confusing it all. Why does Super Tuesday exist? Let's take a break, do some news, and we'll find out more about it before we hit our Tech Tuesday here on 720 WGN.
Say where she came from.
That's such a weird thing that Mick does.
Brawl. Yesterday don't matter. It's Super Tuesday.
That's what today is. It's Super Tuesday.
Were you wondering why Super Tuesday exists and when it started? Because I had no idea.
I was wondering both why it exists and when it started, yes.
I'm going to say 1992.
I think earlier.
Close.
Is it earlier?
I thought it was old time.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was many, many years ago, but the concept originated, this according to Politico.com, the concept originated in 1988.
Hmm.
Very close, Steve.
Off by 4 years, Steve. Circle gets the square.
I was remember the 92 Super Tuesday. Bill Clinton, remember, finished second or third in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And was banking on a big Super Tuesday. They got it, and the Clintons celebrated at the Palmer House.
Oh, they did?
I was there for their rally.
Oh, how about that?
Super Tuesday.
You might be there again.
1992, and it was kind of a big night because Hillary Clinton came out and introduced her husband.
Oh.
So it was a big moment in the Clinton history.
Sure.
That's something I would like to discuss later on, by the way. A husband and wife tag team president. I'd like to talk about that later.
Well, other than Benjamin Harrison and James Buchanan, two presidents have never been married to each other. This would be only the second time in history.
3, 2, 1.
People forget about those guys, but
it's
they
a
were
chore coming into work.
They
sometimes.
Were happily married for many, many years.
not always happily. Married.
Not always happily. No, it was stormy toward the end.
Right.
Yep.
Or the end.
Yep.
You're gonna get texts now.
I don't know how to respond to them.
The concept
Buchanan. It was weird.
Remind me though, because there's something I'd like to talk about that dynamic.
All right.
Later on today.
Okay.
The concept originated of Super Tuesday in 1988 for two main reasons. The consolidation of voters and organization of campaigns. Southern Democrats wanted to highlight the electoral significance of their region by grouping states on a single day of voting.
But wouldn't the advantage there go to the candidate that's the most agile? Because all of a sudden you have to be in so many places within a short span of time. I would think you'd be rewarded just by the fact that you could travel better.
Are they going to all these states?
I think Bernie went to 11 in 7 days.
Did he go to that many, Steve? I thought it was less for him. There were some states that he just realized.
Well, there's some states. You're right. He was just on a big 11-state run. But, yeah, I think there are many states he's riding off to.
Yeah.
Is that the whistle stop tour?
It's not the whistle stop tour. No, that's on a train. Yeah, that's on a train. Go on, Steve.
Think of it this way. You know, when Iowa has so much play, everyone's talking about farm issues and ethanol and all of that.
Yeah.
So the southern states were saying, how do we get on the map as far as being catered to and being promised things? And one of the ways they thought they could do it is to sort of hold a regional primary.
Yeah.
So then southern issues would have to be addressed in the race for president rather than they being you know, diluted throughout the primaries.
Except that then there's states that aren't in, like Alaska is nowhere near the southern region.
No, but you've got like Vermont and Georgia in the south. They're close in every reason but geography.
Yeah.
Not really.
Not
Alabama,
really at all.
Alabama, Arkansas, no. Georgia, Tennessee, and Texas.
Minnesota, yeah. Tonight, they have caucuses.
Makes sense. I should go to stevebertrand.com instead of politico.com because that explains it better to me.
It explains it a lot better. But it's strange that some states, like you mentioned, Iowa, or to some extent, I guess you could say South Carolina, they get so much attention and so much focus. But then on a day like today where it's that spread out, those states don't get anywhere near the focus.
No, it's like a winnowing. And now it's, you know, in the party leaders, especially the Republicans this time, front loaded everything because they wanted to protect the establishment. You know, they wanted to keep it from dragging out.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, it plays perfectly to the anti-establishment Donald Trump.
Hmm.
Has Super Tuesday mattered in recent elections? In 2012, Mitt Romney took a commanding lead in delegates and tried to declare the race over.
Oh.
In 2008, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton each declared victory after a close and chaotic finish. But, boy, don't do that.
But that's the game. We've already seen that this year where somebody could come in third and still spin it as this is a win. I mean, that's not a new thing. It's confusing because you go, but wait, you came in third. You did not win.
Well, Hillary Clinton did it essentially in Iowa, too. I mean, she did win, but it was very close. It was really almost a tie.
Yeah.
And she early on just declared, I win. And so now when we think of it, we're like, oh, yeah, Hillary Clinton won Iowa.
Right.
And she did, but just by
a narrow margin.
It was nearly tied.
Yeah. And another thing, finally, from Politico.com, will any candidates drop out afterward? Hanging on by a thread, Ohio Governor John Kasich and retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson.
Kasich's not going anywhere until
I don't think so.
Could face serious losses across the country and be pressured by party officials to give up hope and help Rubio and Cruz take it to Trump. The longer the two shots stay in the race, the harder it is to make up the gap between Trump's delegate total and everyone else's.
Interesting.
I got news for you. They're not going to make it up. I mean, if after tonight, I don't think anyone else will have much of a shot at getting a majority. They might be able to keep him from getting a majority if they're lucky.
Yeah.
But I don't know how it would happen. But see, Kasich isn't going to lose because he's banking on Michigan and his state of Ohio, and those are coming up in a couple of weeks.
It's pretty interesting. It's about to get real, people. 7 hours, 16 minutes, and 14 seconds until the first polls close.
All right. We will keep an eye on it. Steve will certainly keep you up to date throughout the news.
And Ryan Burrow later from Florida.
Yeah, we'll talk to Ryan Burrow. All right, so
Florida.
A break here.
I know.
Did Ryan pick which state they should
He's
send him
busy,
to?
Because you guys.
Florida's not.
He was in South Carolina over the weekend.
He's right. Not wearing socks and sandals and shorts. He's busy working.
Okay, so he doesn't have socks on. He doesn't have sandals on.
You better have pants on or we're not talking to him. All right, let's take a quick break.
Tech
and then,
Tuesday, man.
It is Tech Tuesday. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Not only is it a Super Tuesday, William.
Yeah.
It is also a Tech Tuesday.
That only happens once every 4 years.
And it's leap year.
Yeah.
So is it every leap year?
Yes, it is.
God, math is not my strong point. I'm not going to pull you down with
All
me.
Right.
Bridget Carey on the line with us, senior editor and host of the CNET update at CNET.com. Bridget, how are you?
Hey, good to talk to you. Doing good. How about you? Well, too.
Everything's great here. Virtual reality and augmented reality. What is that?
Okay. So basically, this is an exciting time for tech to put on your face.
Better than makeup.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you always hear us talk about like up and coming virtual reality headsets, but this week, two very, very publicized ones have gone on pre-orders, so they're almost ready to ship. You have Microsoft and their HoloLens. Now, that is not virtual reality necessarily. We call it augmented reality. You can think of it as mixed reality, where you can see through the screen and things just kind of float in front of you. And their HoloLens is right now just being open to a few computer programmers, some developers, so that way they can start making apps for it. And it's pricey, $3,000, because they're trying to encourage only serious people, I suppose, you know, and it's early tech still. But by the end of the month, you're going to start seeing online people playing with these things and checking them out, and really seeing what value you can really get out of something to put on your face to maybe have something float in front of you. And the thing that makes me most excited is, like, I'm trying to fix something or I'm trying to hang something. I would love to get guidance, like, just projected in my field of view in front of me on what I should do next, like, in terms of steps, instead of having to, just kind of watch a YouTube video. The other thing that anyone can buy themselves starting now is it's a gaming virtual reality set by HTC. This is fully covering your eyes and your view with a screen. It's called the Vive, and it's $800. So it's pretty expensive for a gaming machine, because you also need a powerful PC to play the games. It's got to be tethered. But this is the first one that has sensors you hook up on around your room. So, like, imagine little camera sensors in the corners of your house. And as you're sitting there, it knows how you're moving your body, because it's not just you and the screen, but it's actually staring back at you to see, like, if you're interacting with things differently.
It's going to spy on you then if it's looking back at you. This scares me, this technology thing.
Everything has so many cameras, and they're really trying to figure out, how do you interact with those worlds? It's one thing to, like, slap a screen in front of your eyes, but how are you interacting back? Is it smooth? If you stick your hand out, will it know you're sticking your hand out? Sony is working on the PlayStation version of this for later this year, and a patent just came out that they want to work on gloves, because right now it's all about holding controllers in your hand. They really can't sense very well how you're moving unless you have something in your hand, and perhaps maybe the way to do it is a glove.
They showed during the Academy Awards on Sunday night, they showed the Samsung, I think it's called a Gear or a Gear VR,
yep.
And they showed that, but they didn't really show what it could do. They only showed that William H. Macy is a fan of it, and that was about it. And I guess if he's a fan of it, I am too.
I could have fantasies about William H. Macy with it, maybe.
You mean more fantasies about William H. Macy.
Okay, that is a much lower end version of virtual reality. That, because what it's doing, it's not like some massive thing you have to connect to a computer with sensors. This is simply a plastic headset, and you slide your phone in front of you. The phone is the computer. The phone is the screen in front of you, and it only works with Samsung phones for the Samsung version.
Oh.
So, and you know what? It makes it easier to afford, because it's, like, you know, around $200, you know, or so dollars, and it's easier to just jump in. But is that going to be as intense as the gaming things you're going to see later this year? No. And that's what we're looking into. Like, how much better can the experience be when these headsets are there, like, have much more computing power than just your smartphone slid into the front of it?
630 has texted, Virtual Boy by Nintendo already came out with this in the 90s, but this is kind of like the second coming. Right?
I know, it's like the power glove. You remember that from the
Nintendo
2? You know?
Yeah,
perhaps it was too early back then. But yeah, this is what they're trying to do, the same stuff now.
And someone else wants us to ask Bridget if any optometrists or neurologists have had opinions about virtual reality, because it's so close to the eyes.
Oh, yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of talk about this, because when these things are in beta right now, they're not fully formed. You don't hear a lot about what doctors necessarily think, but it's all short-term use right now is the recommendation, especially with, you know, kids. Because, I mean, let's just, you know, forget the eyes. You will feel, like, a little nauseous and dizzy after a while.
Sure.
If you're in these environments that aren't calibrated right. Even just playing a game on a demo version, it was like one of those first-person shooter run-around games. It was no different than an Xbox game you can buy, but I had it in front of my face. And I was getting a little woozy over, like, how the world was moving faster than I wanted to move. And, you know, you have to kind of take it in short spurts.
The good news is, I think kids using acid, that's going to drop a lot.
Oh.
And I honestly don't mean that to be funny. It's like, really, you could get kind of a wild trip using virtual reality,
right,
playing a game.
Right.
And isn't that why people, I've never dropped acid, so I have no idea. But isn't that to escape? Can't you use this in its place, maybe?
Yeah, and I see a lot of people use this as, like, a something that gets you like you know how if you watch a really scary movie or play a really scary game
yeah.
in the dark, you get that adrenaline pumping high. This is the same thing. You're just alone. A lot of scary content's being made of being like alone, like with all your senses covered, and you can't have any control of where you're walking, and something pops in front of you. So yeah, it's another way of storytelling there.
And Bridget, people have alluded that in the near future, this could be used for adult type business as well.
Already
it?
Is.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Forget the future. They already are companies.
It's already happening.
Like you don't know. Bill, that's cute.
And when I say adult type business, I mean paying your taxes, that sort of thing.
You put the love in the Nintendo Power Glove.
Cut it out. Stop it. All right. So all right. There's a reason to get it, I guess, for everybody. Good.
All right. Bridget Carey on the line with us. You can watch her at CNET.com. She is the host of the CNET update. Before we let you go, what's going on with the drama involving Apple and the FBI?
Well, the latest stuff in the whole request to unlock phones. Yesterday, Apple was in another legal case. We all know about Apple and the FBI and the San Bernardino shooter and unlocking that iPhone. But there's another case going on in New York regarding a drug dealer's iPhone. And in that case on Monday, a judge ruled the government has no right to force Apple to unlock an iPhone using the All Writs Act. It's a very old law. As the basis of making that order. Now, that ruling could set a precedent to strengthen Apple's argument in that FBI case.
Yeah.
So see that. And now today, later in the afternoon, Apple's going to make an appeal to lawmakers in the House saying Congress should be deciding these issues instead of having it be determined by the courts with warrants based on old statutes.
Well, I'm sure the FBI or our government has someone to crack these codes. And if they don't, why don't they just pay a former genius from Apple, pay him a ton of money to come work for the government, and bing, bang, boom, your case is solved.
I know. It's kind of like that thing like, wait, really? Like, we can't crack an iPhone? But it's all about the
principle,
the things that they have in place.
Laws.
Right. It's things they have in place to erase everything if you start tinkering.
But do it privately, and then no one would have even known about this.
Other people have alluded to that probably would have been the right way, but it's too late for that now, isn't it, Bridget? You can't go back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now this is a very public case for Apple. You know, Apple has in the past helped the government, worked with the government when it's in their means, and now it's like, hey, why don't you write new software to help us? Okay, no. Now
yeah.
The whole world knows, you know, now it's an issue about consumers trusting us, and they're taking a stand. I'm not saying that like they haven't had this exact kind of issue before, but similar things when they can help, they do.
What's coming up on the CNET update for today?
Well, we're also looking at this new app that is supposed to be better than Siri or any other voice assistant. It's called Hound, and you can download it on your iPhone or whatever, and you can ask very complex questions like, find me a hotel on Tuesday, max $500 a night, that's also pet friendly, and boom, just with your voice question, like the answers come up. So it's the fact that you can do many levels in your question and have an answer come up. So it's trying to be better than Apple and Cortana and the others in that regard. So we're just starting to test it out now, and it's fast in some ways and slow in others.
It's called Hound?
Yeah, Hound, H-O-U-N-D.
And one final text before we let you go. Somebody has texted us with a great idea, 847. Maybe sometime in the future, Bridget could talk about information for visually impaired people on a Tech Tuesday. So maybe get some things together and some good ideas for them.
Oh, yeah. There are some programs out there. So I'll keep my eyes and ears open.
Perfect. Thank you, Bridget. Appreciate it. Have a good rest of the week.
Hey, thanks, you too.
Thanks,
all right.
Bridget.
Thank you, Bridget. A quick break, and then some news, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thank you so much. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. It's our Super Tuesday show. You can call in 312-981-7200. You can text in at that same number. Yesterday, we talked quite a bit about the 88th Annual Academy Awards, the Oscar telecast. We talked about some of the winners, some of the losers, whether or not Chris Rock did or did not do a good job. You and I were both of the opinion, and Steve as well, that Chris Rock did a very, very good job under interesting circumstances. Some of the textures were on our side, but most were not. Most said that there was a lot of piling on. They understand the fact that the diversity issue was a big deal, but enough already. But we all thought, here on the show anyway, that he did what needed to be done under the circumstances.
It had to be mentioned.
Well, he did more than mention it. The bulk of his opening monologue, which was about 10 minutes long, easily three quarters or more, was about that.
That's what's in the news.
It is.
And he did it in a creative
right.
and truthful way.
I think so, too. I do think so, too. All right. So now comes word that people are upset for different reasons, and I'll give you one of them in particular. There was a joke that was done at the Academy Awards, you know, every year. And I don't know, I don't understand why this is a thing at the Academy Awards, but they have to bring out the representatives from PricewaterhouseCooper. That's the accounting firm that tabulates the votes. And it's always ridiculous because it's always
so dumb.
It's three people with briefcases looking official who you've never seen before and you'll never see again.
And you don't even care about it.
No. We assume in watching it that somebody already knows who won. Somebody had to count the votes. We understand that. We get that. So it's them and they did it. And now they have suitcases and that's it. But they parade them out and people applaud.
It is so dumb.
It's ridiculous. Well, Chris Rock thought he would have a little fun with it, or his writers did. And he introduced them. And he said, I'll read you the exact quote. He's talking about the fact that that's what they do at the Academy Awards. They bring out the accountants from PricewaterhouseCooper. So he said, here's the quote. They sent us their most dedicated, accurate, hardworking representatives. Please welcome Ming Zhu, Bao Ling, and David Moskowitz. And then three kids came out, three little kids dressed in either tuxedos or dresses, depending if they were guys or girls. And they took a bow. And one of the kids seemed like he couldn't find his place on the stage.
The middle kid, the younger, right. It looked like a family, if you want to know the truth. Brother, sister,
two brothers, maybe.
And a sister. Yeah. And they acted like it because that little kid in the middle, the youngest, was like, you're not standing on your mark.
Right.
Move over here,
right.
here. And then he left it alone for a second, and
right.
then he came back, and he's like, I saw him pulling at his,
right.
what
right.
appeared to be his brother.
Well, I thought it was harmless.
It was funny. I didn't really get it 100%.
Asian groups are furious, saying that it played into the stereotype of just because it's Asian people, in this case Asian kids, they must be great at math, and of course they're accountants, and they're very, very upset. Most notably, a basketball player, Jeremy Lin, but there's other groups that are furious, saying don't perpetrate the stereotype, that's ridiculous. Just because we're Asian doesn't mean we're accountants, doesn't mean we're great at math. Please don't do that to us. I thought the joke was that he mentioned three people's names that were, it was an Asian sounding name, Ming Zhu. It was another Asian sounding name, Bao Ling. And then David Moskowitz sounds like a Jewish accountant. But
and there are a
three,
lot of Jewish accountants.
Yes, there are. Yes, there are.
What, how?
But then you had three Asian kids come out. So I thought that the joke was, look, I just mentioned three Asian names, but one of those kids, or three, two Asian names and a Jewish name. But look, they're not. I thought that's what he was going for. But evidently, people are furious about this.
Isn't math very important? Aren't the American schools trying to be more like the Asian schools, where they focus more on math and reading? And our arts have suffered from it because they have cut, like, the music programs and the art
yeah.
programs. And now you get, like, a week of art in your social studies class, a week of music in
right.
your history class.
Right. It's right.
And now I've just read something online that the Chinese schools are coming to America to try and instill some of the special interests into their classes.
Oh, but that's a surprise. I didn't know that was going on.
Is it a surprise that we've based a lot of our education on what they do in China and they're amazing at math? Is that a bad thing?
I don't know. I guess I'm just guessing here. I guess if I was of Asian heritage, I would say, this is a stereotype. Please, enough already. We're not all great at math. We're not all accountants, I guess. But then it's a positive stereotype.
Yes.
If it's negative, if you were making some joke about how
Asian
people are terrible at math,
right.
then I guess you'd be offended. But to be good or great at something, even though it is a stereotype, I mean, obviously not all Asian people are great at math. That's obvious, right? But I think it's, wouldn't it be harder to be offended if the stereotype is a good one, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe I'm reading this wrong. I saw the joke and I didn't even think twice about it. I told you, I thought the joke was that, look, I mentioned a Jewish kid's name and it's three Asian kids. I thought that was the joke. That's what I thought he was going for.
I didn't even really get it because I thought whenever in the past when they've brought out these people from
PricewaterhouseCooper, right. Formerly just Pricewaterhouse.
Right, the Cooper was throwing me.
That's fairly new, yeah.
Weren't they always Jewish people?
No, it's all walks of life. It's just, you know, it's just one of those moments of the show where you go, we know somebody counted the votes. You don't have to show me. I trust you. Whoever counted the votes, good.
I didn't think anything of it other than I didn't really get it. I'm like, oh, those are cute kids.
And
what was so cute is they had briefcases.
Right.
And I didn't even really listen to the names. I just saw them walking out with the briefcases, playing dress up,
right.
And watching the little brother, allegedly little brother, just bothering the older kid. I thought it was cute and I moved on,
right.
But I'm not Asian. So,
yeah.
Pat, what do you think?
I think you guys are great, first of all.
Thank you,
Pat.
Second of all, if I was Asian, I'd be proud of the fact that I am pretty astute at math and science. That would be number one. But number two, you know, this stuff has gone over the top. I mean, you know, if you look cross-eyed at somebody, there's some defamation league or person or whatever group that's going to be offended by it. And you know what? As a student of history, I realize one thing. The older I get in this country, what made this country great was a unified language and a unified continent to live on and a unified or country, unified monetary system and everything else. And now what is happening is we've gone so far into the political correctness,
right.
And everything else that you have all of these different nationalities, which is great. That's the diversity. That's the melting pot. But, I mean, they get so bent out of shape about this. I mean, I feel like wanting to shake somebody and say, hey, buddy, chill out, relax. You know what? It's the United States
right.
of America, and it's for everybody. Everybody can do what they want to do, and everybody has an opportunity to succeed and go forward. But I just think, I feel sad that things are, I mean, if you look at different parts of the world, what has caused the problems? It's the intolerance of different types of religions, different monetary systems, different cultures and everything else. You can't cross my border without 4,000 pieces of paper. And I mean, look at what made this country great and look at what keeps the rest of the world sometimes behind us.
Thank you
much,
Pat.
Well said, Pat.
And we'll take a quick break and we have more people that would like to chime in on this.
Yeah.
And if you're Asian, please call and explain this to us because I guess a stereotype is a stereotype, whether it's negative or positive.
Yeah, it's trickier because it's
not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. If somebody branded me great at math, it'd be hard for me to, you know, be mad at them. But I've not had hundreds of years of people saying, well, your people are great at math. Because, I mean, we haven't, you know. All right, your thoughts on this, 312-981-7200. Give us a call or a text. We'll get to those next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Are you uneasy about the future? They're preparing for the worst. See the making of a Chicago area prepper. That is tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what this means either. Chris Rock did a joke at the Academy Awards on Sunday night. He was bringing out the accountant firm three representatives anyway, from PricewaterhouseCooper. Those are the people who tabulate the votes. And then he introduced them. He said, let's bring out Ming Zhao, Bao Ling, and David Moskowitz. And then three kids came out. The kids happened to be Asian. A lot of people in the Asian community are upset about this, saying, don't assume just because we're Asian that we're great at math or we're accountants. And then they also say in this article at USA Today that they're also upset because they were poking fun in that joke at child labor laws. I don't think anybody who saw, nobody who saw that thought those kids were actually accountants. Everybody who saw that knew that these were three kids dressed to look like accountants. I would love to meet the person who was watching the telecast saying, you can't have little kids be accountants. This is wrong.
All right. I don't even know where to begin with this. We had talked about stereotypes, and I guess a stereotype is a stereotype, even if it's positive. Caleb, what do you think?
Hey, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm a college freshman. I go to Rock Valley College in Rockford, Illinois, and I'm studying to be a high school English teacher. So I'm in an intro to education class right now.
Oh,
we
good.
Have a whole class Yeah, one time about stereotypes and how we, as an educator or as even just a person that's taking up space in this world, you need to really be careful about even positive, quote-unquote positive stereotypes. So my teacher said that one time she had this this kid in her class who was Asian, and she just assumed he was getting real good grades and all this, that he never needed help with anything. But at the end of the year, his sister came in and said she did all of his homework, all of his math homework, because he sucked at math and like school in general. But just because he was Asian, he was getting good grades, the teacher assumed he didn't need help or anything, where he really did need a lot of help.
Sure, of course.
So it was a dangerous assumption to make, and I think even though it's called a positive stereotype, it still can be dangerous.
I guess so. Well, Caleb, thank you.
Thank you, Caleb.
Appreciate it.
That's a good point. Scott has something to say. Hi, Scott.
Yes, you said you wanted Asians to call in. I am Asian. I'm from Russia. And I was just wondering, why do you classify Asians as only being Oriental? I mean, Turkey is in Asia. Afghanistan is in Asia. Are those people good in math as well?
No,
I'd like to say that.
I think China is the thing.
The what they were doing here.
You said Asian.
Well,
because we're trying to be politically correct. Because you said Oriental, and I don't think that's politically correct. I'm so scared to say anything. I'm Caucasian. That's what I said the other day.
I'm white. I'm not afraid to say that. Isn't that what we are? We're black. We're white. You know, we're Mexican. There's an array of things. People need to lighten up. But how come you're categorizing Asians as being smart in math? What, does that mean that everyone from Turkey is smart in math? When you say Asian, what do you think of? You don't think of people from Russia. You don't think of people from Turkey. So how is that politically correct?
Because, Scott, for the purpose of this story, what they're doing is they're separating. I mean, we don't have to because it's already done within the context of the story. You're right. All those places you mentioned are part of technically part of Asia, but the stereotype goes to, I guess,
to China mainly.
China and Japan to some extent.
But mainly China.
Yeah, mainly China.
Isn't that a stereotype in itself to say Asia is only of people from China?
Yeah, of course it is.
The continent?
I know, but you just said Oriental, and people don't like that anymore. And why is it still the Oriental Theater? That's what I want to know.
Absolutely. I didn't say it with any malice. If it's offensive, I certainly apologize. But that's the problem. People need to lighten up. I used it in context. I didn't know it was a poor term, and I certainly didn't say it with any malice.
Right.
So isn't that part of it? You know what? Lighten up and stuff. But as far as stereotypes goes, everybody's a stereotype. You're going to tell me that there's not different cultures of food that people eat? Well, now it's a stereotype.
I prefer to call it the melting pot, because that's what it is.
That's exactly what it is. These stereotypes, we're all from different places. So everybody has a different culture. My culture is different from yours, yet you might call yourself white. I'm white as well, but my culture is different from yours. But
absolutely.
Now we call it a stereotype. Everybody wants to cry and moan and whatever. And that, as far as, you know, that other guy said, you know, this is America, you can do what you want. You can do what you want. And part of being offended by a joke on TV is what you want. You're allowed to be offended as well. Why does it go one way and not the other?
All right. You
Thank
make
you,
some
Scott.
Good points.
Thanks.
And we appreciate you calling. I'm American. That's what I am.
There was a car I saw a couple of weeks ago, and on one side of the bumper sticker, and I'm sure you've seen this bumper sticker. It's become very, very popular in the last couple of years. It says coexist,
yeah,
and all the letters are of different
faiths.
Origin, and yeah, and it looks, I
religious
mean,
religious symbols, I believe,
yeah.
There's
a crucifix in there. There's a Star of David in there. So there it said coexist. So that was on one side. On the other side, it said celebrate our differences, which is kind of the same message, but in a different way, because celebrate our differences means, hey, even though we're all trying to get along, there are differences between us. So instead of playing them down or being offended by those differences, celebrate the fact that we don't all look the same and act the same. And that's true.
You know how boring this world would be
Terrible.
If we all looked the same? Ask Hitler about that.
Terrible.
We have time for one more. And Nancy, you've got 30 seconds, so go.
Well, I found it superficially amusing, but on the other hand, I have three daughters who are from China, mm-hmm. who were raised in a very integrated community, and I have to tell you, from day one when we brought them home from China, they were stereotyped of going to be excel at math, excel at play. Oh, they all had to play the violin, of course, and would be intellectually superior. And let me tell you the opposite side of that. My youngest, who is 13, has been ridiculed by children in her class for having Asian eyes.
Oh, my God.
Seriously, they have called her, one little boy called her yellow. And
in this day and age, I'm shocked.
It's hard to imagine. Yeah.
Isn't it really? And yeah. I'm the mom who cried when she told me this. And her sisters told her to buck up because that's the way the world is. So it breaks my heart that we cannot coexist, that we can't celebrate differences and recognize that we are different. But when that behavior is learned at home, this is what it does.
And I thought children were more accepting of the differences.
It seems like we're making progress.
I'm shocked at this.
Except it's what we learn at home. You know, and I have to, you know, on the opposite of that, of some of the friends who my children, who do have Chinese friends who with Chinese parents as opposed to American parents, the Chinese parents have told my daughters that they're not, quote, really Chinese.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Because they're not raised that way.
Right.
On the other hand, to leave you with a bit of humor with this, when my youngest was in preschool, came home, she had a dear friend she met the first day of school named Sharika.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Mom, she's Indian. But you have to understand, it's not the Indian that wears feathers in their head.
Oh, all right.
That's so pretty cute, Nancy.
Yeah, so, you know, a kind heart is all I can say.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy. Have a good rest of the week. All right, let's do this. Thanks, everybody, for calling in and texting in. Greatly appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. Kim's got the news, and then we have more show for you. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
You know what it is today. It's Super Tuesday, it's Tech Tuesday, and it's Midwest Independent Film Fest Tuesday.
Everything converges at once. There's so much going on right now. Our friend Mike McDonald is here.
Mike McNamara is here.
Mike McDonald is here from the Doobie Brothers to sing you some songs. Mike McNamara is here from the Midwest Independent Film Festival.
So I charged you for that?
That was not a bad impression, Mike McDonald.
Excellent.
That was outstanding. It is the first Tuesday of every month, and it's great, and we have you on every month to talk about the films, all locally produced, of course.
Yep. Very unique festival. We're all year round every first Tuesday, and we only show films that are produced in Chicago and in the Midwest. And
hence the name.
Yep, hence the name. There it is. And tonight we have the Chicago premiere. This is your only chance to see this film on the big screen. You can't see it anywhere else. And it's called Killing Them Safely, and it's a pretty controversial documentary, and was actually produced by a Chicago native who's now in Columbia, Missouri, and I decided to bring him in and
would
have him tell
you about
Nick
Berardini?
That's him.
That's me, yes.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. We saw the trailer for this. It's short, yeah. I'll tell you that. but it definitely piqued our interest in finding out more about this whole taser industry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the interesting thing is you say it's an industry, and what very few people really understand is it's not an industry. It's one company, and it's basically three guys sort of pulling the strings.
That was shocking to me.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting sort of backstory about how they were able to make these weapons that were in circulation for about 20 years, but just weren't very effective, about how they made them effective and then fought, you know, vigorously to maintain their patent. And I think it's very safe to say they're the most powerful company in law enforcement, because they're also the market leader in the body camera stuff right now.
Is it such that they hold the patents to this, that nobody is opposing them and doing different versions of the taser? Is that what's
people
going on?
People tried and they failed in court because this company is really, really, really sharp with their litigation strategy, and they were able to sort of keep everybody out for a significant enough time that people stopped trying, basically. Yeah.
When was the taser first introduced, and for what purpose? For policing?
Yeah, well, the original inventor was this guy named Jack Cover, who was a really fascinating NASA scientist, and back in the 60s and 70s with all the airplane hijackings and all these things, he thought this would be the perfect sort of weapon that would start to phase out guns as defense, as home defense, or like if you're a marshal on an airplane, you don't want to put a bullet bullet hole in the plane. So this could be the weapon that you would use. So it was initially intended sort of as a civilian device, but they ran into a lot of regulation with the ATF because it used gunpowder to fire. And so it was regulated as a firearm, which meant people had to become trained and get permits and all those things. So it died out sort of as a civilian model, but it was repurposed eventually for law enforcement use. And it didn't
really... By this
really,
company now
yes,
that has
yeah.
it.
And it didn't really work at first. Jack Cover did try with a couple other companies to make it for law enforcement, but they weren't strong enough to be effective in the field regularly. And this company came along, made it very, very effective.
The word taser is Thomas A. Swift's electronic rifle?
Yeah,
is that what
Thomas
that
A. They changed. He added the A. It was based off the book Tom Swift and His Electric Rifle, which was written by Victor Appleton as a series of sort of like the first young adult novels. They were these sci-fi books. And the original title of our documentary was Tom Swift and His Electric Rifle because we wanted to, you know, throw a hint that the good guy, you know, or the guy that invents the technology is always the good guy. And that's very much what this movie is about these men who are tracking sort of the decisions they made over 15 years, trying to justify them, trying to, you know, to still see themselves as the good guys.
And the taser is relevant today for everyone living in Chicago.
Hugely
right?
relevant.
With everything. I mean, that was part of the reason we were like, now's the time to show this film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Producer Brock Williams, we've shown some other films that he's worked on. He's also with you in Columbia, Missouri. We're like, now's the time. And you talk a little about that.
Yeah. You know, what's frustrating to me is Chicago has already done this. Chicago expanded taser use in 2010, 2011. Dan Hinkle, the Chicago Tribune, among some others, wrote really great pieces about this expanded taser program didn't reduce shootings at all, and led to, for the way I would put it is, you know, for every Laquan McDonald where the hypothetical situation presents itself for this weapon, there is at least 1,000. I mean, just based on the numbers of how many times it's used, probably much, much more. The ratio is much, much higher even than that, probably, where people are tasered for passive resistance. And that's exactly what happened in Chicago the last time they expanded taser use, because over 15 years of really wide circulation, anyone who keeps track knows they don't reduce deadly force. That's just not how they're used. The hypothetical idea is really right, but in practicality, they're not good weapons to reduce deadly force because they're electric, so they can misfire.
Yeah.
They require officers to shoot and make contact.
So you have to be pretty close.
Yeah, and in dynamic situations, it's pretty easy to miss. So really, that's just... that they're adopted under the wrong premise. The premise is, do they reduce injuries to suspects in the field? That's much more controversial because there's an argument for it, but I don't think it's a great argument.
All right, let's take a quick break. We've got Mike and Nick here from the Midwest Independent Film Festival. We got to get another Doobie Brothers song from you before this is over, Mike. I insist.
Yeah, I'm OB.
All right. Oh, that would be fantastic.
That's my favorite.
All right, we'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. They had to play that song twice for me.
Double the pleasure, double your fun with Mike McNamara of the Midwest Independent Film Festival, which is happening tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking to Nick Berardini, a Lake Forest native who is the director of Killing Them Safely. It's about tasers, and I don't think they're good for you.
Yeah, well, what's really striking about the film is we made the film from the company's point of view because it's more a movie about Taser International and these men than it is about tasers. Because the use of force debate around how to use the weapons is so complicated, we made the movie really for police officers. We wanted to say, okay, you guys can sort out what is important to you, but you only get one source of information. All the training for this weapon is controlled by the company, who obviously has a vested interest in it being used and sold.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot left out in the training material that's important. And this movie, the way it's so structured, the way I think it's really interesting is that because it's from the point of view of the company, as it sort of gradually builds out, it's not attacking, you know, from the outside in. It's sort of gradually attacking from the inside out. And I think a lot of police officers, a lot of them have seen the film and really enjoy it because it takes their perspective into, I would say, the most consideration. You know, we're trying to be really thoughtful about what the job is actually like and how important important it is that they know what they're dealing with.
So the Taser company cooperated with you to mm-hmm. some extent, mm-hmm. but then when the final product is done, do they look at it and go, uh-oh, I don't like the way we look at
this?
No, they never even looked at it. They didn't.
What's so interesting, too, is that, you know, it's a movie in a way about a cult, and movies about cults are fascinating. Yeah. They have an absolutist culture where if they accept any criticism, they'll basically have to accept all criticism.
Yeah.
And the reason is because the only thing that matters to them is police departments. And if police departments start distrusting them, it's a floodgate, right? So basically, they didn't even, as far as I know, maybe they watched it secretly or something, but in every response, they've been really vocal about responding to a lot of the press we've gotten about the film. I mean, even as far as like the vice president of communications commenting in the internet comments on articles about the movie, because they can't, they just don't want to see what they've become.
Right.
Because if they do, personally, on a human level, maybe they'd have a nervous breakdown, you know, about the collateral damage they've caused. But also, if they start to accept that criticism, then the law enforcement agencies who've been trained, this does not kill people, will start to now really question that really absolute stance that they've had from the beginning.
Yeah.
I know tasers are based on electrical current, which is what your brain is, which is what your heart is, which is how your body functions. I know people have been killed from the tasers, which doesn't surprise me. You think about all that.
Right.
But what are the lasting effects if you don't die from it? There has to be some kind of residual effect.
Yeah, there was just actually one of the most interesting studies done, because it is true. Like, it's rare that somebody will die. There are two things to consider. The first thing is that, is it worth subjecting the person to the pain? Because you assume, of course, like if they live, it's still a very painful experience.
Sure.
Did you get tasered when you were doing this? Because I want to know just how painful it is.
I didn't fall into that trap, luckily for me, because they've used that in the past. A journalist will come in or a critic will come in or somebody and they'll say, well, if you think it's so dangerous, why don't you get tasered? And then they do. And then they use that against them and say, he thinks it's so safe or she thinks it's so safe, they got tasered.
Yeah.
But the big thing is
the old, why don't you get tasered?
Right. Track. That's a funny game.
And it's funny, but
great,
like,
party
that's the
game
show on the Game Show Network I watch.
You know, what was so effective was they would take these police officers in training and taser them for a half a second or a second or whatever, and, you know, sometimes the full 5 seconds, and they would show them how powerful it was, but they would limit all the circumstances in which you might be killed or injured, and people
right.
still got injured in training. There were a lot of officers who ended up fracturing backs and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's why they're not, the training is not mandatory anymore. Officers don't have to be exposed anymore. But so you would take these officers, and it is a funny situation. The film lays out through the first 15 minutes how it took off, and it was like Hangover style. They would take these, you know, officers into training. They would taser their buddies in the back. Everybody would laugh, and they think it's, you know,
that's
it's disarming.
That's a good time.
And then they go out into the field, and they taser somebody for 45 seconds, and the person dies, and they throw their hands up like, what the hell?
How'd
right?
that happen?
So,
oh, no.
So there's the length of time that people are being tasered, which is really dangerous and also extremely painful. But a recent study from Drexel also just came out showing that it can have significant short-term memory effects, that even suspects tasered and that end up being okay, that don't die or are seriously
yeah.
injured, perhaps don't even understand their Miranda rights because of what the weapon is potentially doing.
Sure, that makes sense.
It's a shock to the system. I could see where it would mess with your memory.
Yeah.
Are there set? I don't. I'm sorry for not knowing this, Nick. But is there a setting? Like, can you set it 1 through 5 or 10?
No,
it's just one.
Yeah,
you get tasered or you don't get tasered.
One, a good time.
Right.
But
there are people who have used this for their own gratification. Right. I hear stories about. Yeah.
But it's also a different version.
Like sexual.
Oh, here we go.
Believe it or not.
Here we go.
Believe it or
not.
What's wrong with people?
Back me up, Nick. It's true, right?
I would have to say that's more of a generic stun gun. They
yeah.
would shock themselves on top of the skin, you know, to kind of get the thrill
oh
of
my
the cattle
God. Really?
There's
how
your
about
sequel.
The old-fashioned way? Just have
to.
Sex.
But, who's got time for that anymore? No one's got the time.
Esther, we need to get this moving.
Right.
Well, hey, I'll say this. So killing them safely, you'll see the Chicago premiere tonight. We're at Landmark Century Center Cinema, 2828 North Clark. I have a few tickets left, and I'm going to offer them up to Bill and Wendy listeners right now. Just, you can message the Midwest Independent Film Festival on Facebook, mention Bill and Wendy, and whether you want one complimentary pass or two complimentary passes, and we'll have them waiting for you at the theater tonight at 6 o'clock.
All right, real quick, Tim, you're already going tonight, right?
I am going tonight. Hey, guys. Mike, it's Tim Armstrong. How are you, buddy?
Oh, hey, Tim.
Hey, so, yeah, I just wanted to shout out that I'm very excited to see this documentary. I was reading about it. Sounds very interesting, and I'm calling to kind of encourage everybody out there listening, go, take the time, join the Midwest Film Festival, Independent Film Festival, and every Tuesday are great events, first Tuesday of every month. Great event.
Yeah, we got that covered, Tim, but we're glad you're going.
Appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to meeting you too, Nick.
Thanks. Good to meet you. Looking forward to meeting you too, Tim.
All right.
Thanks.
One more time, Tim's give out the information for how people can get
Tim
some
Tim has a really
tickets.
Good project he's actually working on about House of Blues that's heading into pre-production.
Can't wait.
But head to, if you want, if you're a Bill and Wendy listener, if you're tuning in right now and you want a couple of passes to see the Chicago premiere tonight, find us on Facebook, Midwest Independent Film Festival, and just send us a message mentioning that you heard us on the air today. Let us know if you want one or two tickets.
Nick Berardini, congratulations, Killing Them Safely. I can't wait to see this. I really can't. Tribeca, it showed there, and where else?
Yeah, Robert De Niro blew me off at Tribeca. That was fun. No, I'm kidding. He's a very busy man.
Yeah,
but I did get to have dinner in the same room with several hundred other people as him, so that was fun.
That's
Tribeca, hot dogs. It was just a huge hit at festivals all over the country, and now it's going to make its premiere in Chicago tonight.
Midwestfilm.com.
Yep. All right, thanks, guys. A quick break. We'll talk to Steve next, find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Can I be honest with you? I like my Super Tuesdays a little less snowy. In my head, a Super Tuesday is a slightly warmer day than the one we're experiencing right now, but that's just me.
I'm with you because this isn't so super.
This is not super. We should sue somebody. Not sure who we would sue, but there's a lawsuit pending.
You know what you remind me of? Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's got a propensity to either sue people or say he's going
to
sue them. He's good at threatening a lawsuit.
Really, Bill and I have been talking about this. I know Steve Cochran talked about it. And, you know, Facebook has made planning a radio show much easier. Have you noticed?
A little bit, yeah.
Because when something is trending, and I saw this John Oliver talking, he finally takes on the, quote, serial liar Donald Trump. And the quote from MotherJones.com is, it's brutally fantastic, and it is. And if you think if you're a Donald Trump supporter, that's fine, but just watch this. We're going to put a link up on our Facebook page at Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. It is so fantastic.
On a weekly basis, John Oliver takes, it's usually one topic. Sometimes there's a couple, but more times than not, the focus of the show is usually on one topic. And he just really does just cut it apart, cut it to pieces. And he even says at the beginning of this week's, it airs first on Sunday night, but then it runs throughout the week on HBO. He even says, we really haven't talked much about Donald Trump on the show. And I was trying to remember if they've talked about him at all. There's been a joke here and there, but nothing major. But the bulk of Sunday night's show is him just kind of disseminating some of the untruths or half-truths that Donald Trump has said. And I know whenever we talk about Donald Trump, people either text in or call in saying, hey, Lee Malay is a good guy.
I'm
He's an honest man. He's got a good...
He's got a good heart. No, that was on Brian Noonan's
show. That was on Brian Noonan's
show
over the weekend, voting for Trump because of his good heart. But for anybody who talks about the honesty that Donald Trump is throwing at us, please, I'm begging you, watch this segment.
And it starts by saying, this MotherJones.com, Donald Trump, and I'm quoting John Oliver, Donald Trump is America's back mole.
Yeah.
It may have seemed harmless a year ago, but now that it has gotten frighteningly bigger, it is no longer wise to ignore it. And with that, John Oliver finally took on the politics of Donald Trump on Sunday after spending months largely ignoring the real estate magnate's meteoric rise in the polls since launching his presidential campaign last summer. But now that Oliver says, but now he has won three states, he's been endorsed by Chris Christie, and polls show him leading most Super Tuesday states, which is a pretty big deal. He is a bit of a liar, a serial liar, as John Oliver calls him, and I believe we have some of his rant.
WrestleMania or Home Alone 2. But if he's actually going to be the Republican nominee, it's time to stop thinking of the mascot and start thinking of the man. Because a candidate for president needs a coherent set of policies. Whatever you think about Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, at least you basically know where they stand. But Trump's opinions have been wildly inconsistent. He's been pro-choice and pro-life, for and against assault weapon bans, in favor of both bringing in Syrian refugees and deporting
them. I don't know what happened to the tape. And it's okay to flip-flop. I mean, John Kerry got completely bambasted about doing that. That's not a word, is it?
I don't think bambasted is a word. No, I know what you're going for.
He got blasted.
Yeah.
For being a flip-flopper. And you know what? I'll fully admit I'm a flip-flopper, and I think a lot of people are flip-floppers and don't choose to admit it, because as your life changes, you learn different things, and it affects your life differently. Once I had children, I started thinking differently than pre-children.
Right.
So it's okay to change your mind, and I think it's kind of a great thing to change your mind, because it shows you're listening to other people. So I'm not getting on his flip-flopping so
right.
much.
Right. Well, aside from the flip-flopping, which I am willing to hand to a candidate and say, okay, you believed one thing at one point in your life, you believe another thing now. I get that. I'm all right with that. But it talks about how litigious he is. If anybody threatens, if you talk at all about the poor time he's had with his businesses, and some have done better than others, but he threatens to sue you, and then John Oliver and his staff, his writing team, goes through some of the missteps that he's taken throughout his career, and there have been plenty of them, and they've been major, major missteps in terms of business.
We may have it again. It was buffering, and I believe the buffering has ended.
All right.
Deporting them out of the country. And that inconsistency can be troubling. Just this morning, for instance, he was asked about the fact that David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, had told supporters to vote for him, and this was his answer.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
Well, just so you understand, I don't know anything about David Duke, okay? I don't know anything about what you're even talking about with white supremacy or white supremacists. Honestly, I don't know David Duke. I don't believe I've ever met him. I'm pretty sure I didn't meet him, and I just don't know anything about him.
Really? That's your best answer there, because you definitely know who he is. Partly because you called him a bigot and a racist in the past. But that's not even the fucking point. The point is, with an answer like that, you are either racist or you are pretending to be. And at some point, there is no difference there. And sure, he disavowed David Duke later in the day. But the scary thing is, we have no way of knowing which of his inconsistent views he will hold in office. Will he stand by a statement that vaccines are linked to autism? Or his belief that Mexico is sending us rapists? Oh, and what about that plan he had to defeat ISIS?
We're fighting a very politically correct war.
Yeah. Well, we see that
and the other thing
mind.
Is with the terrorists, you have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families. They care about their lives, don't kid yourself.
Mr.
But they
Trump.
Say they don't care about their lives. You have to take out their families.
That is the front runner for the Republican nomination advocating a war crime. And he might say he was joking or he's changed his mind about any of these things. And private individuals are allowed to change their minds. We all do it. But when he's sworn in as president on January 20th, 2017, on that day, his opinions are going to matter. And you will remember that date, because it's the one that time travelers from the future will come back to try and stop the whole thing from happening. And listen, I get that the character of Donald Trump is entertaining and that he says things that people want to hear. And I know his very name is powerful. Just listen to this one supporter explain what it means to her.
I was a little girl.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't even know what Trump Towers were, but I knew that he was a wealthy, successful man.
Somehow, like there was even as a very young kid, the word Trump sort of meant rich to
It
you.
Meant success.
She's not even wrong. Trump does sound rich. It's almost onomatopoeic. Trump. It's the sound produced when a mouthy servant is slapped across the face with a wad of $1,000 bills. Trump. It's the sound of a cork popping on a couple's champagne-iversary, the date renovations in the wine cellar were finally completed. The very name Trump is the cornerstone of his brand. If only there were a way to uncouple that magical word from the man he really is. Well, guess what? There is. Because it turns out the name Trump was not always his family's name. One biographer found that a prescient ancestor had changed it from, and this is true, Drumpf. Yes. King Drumpf. And Drumpf is much less magical.
It's the sound produced when a morbidly obese pigeon flies into the window of a foreclosed Old Navy. Drunk! It's the sound of a bottle of store brand root beer falling off the shelf in a gas station mini mart. And it may seem weird to bring up his ancestral name, but to quote Donald Trump, he should be proud of his heritage. Because drunk is much more reflective of who he actually is.
So and that is in reference to John Stewart thing where Donald Trump had said, whatever John Stewart's real name is, why don't you show your heritage and use your real name?
Right, 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 right. Now, as funny as that is, and it is, it's well written, it's well delivered, it's very, very funny. I want to go back just a minute or two. He's on Fox and Friends, and Fox and Friends asked them how he would deal with ISIS, and his answer is, you have to take out their families. That's dangerous. It really is. If you were looking at another world power that didn't get along with the United States, and they said, what do you do with the United States? And their answer was, well, you take out the leaders' families. We'd have a problem.
And, you know, when John Oliver came out and said, really, because if that guy is president, he's going to partake in war crimes.
Yeah.
And it's funny because then you talk to people who say, well, these war crimes need to be changed. And, you know, it worries me that sometimes people don't stick to the rules of war crimes. But, God, that's scary.
Look at if ISIS said, if a leader of ISIS said, hey, Donald Trump's the new president. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go after his daughter. We're going to go after his son. We're going to go after his wife. What would that be like?
It's unbelievable. And they also featured, was it Donald Jr. in there mentioning something?
Yeah.
And Ivanka, who's just adorable. And this is a lovely little story Ivanka shared where she said she was walking down the streets and they saw a homeless guy. And Donald said, that guy is $3 billion better off than I am because he was $3 billion in debt at one point.
Yeah.
And John Oliver went on to say, you know, boy, look at how he treats a homeless person.
Yeah.
I mean, know. You know, and if you want to vote for him and you think he's a great candidate, there are a lot of good things that I'm seeing in Trump running. Again, just shaking it up and getting people to pay more attention. Because really, before I heard politics and I would be like, blah, 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 I don't care. I care now because we're all involved in this. And I think people are paying more attention because of him, don't you?
People are definitely paying more attention.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
That part's the good thing. But the bad thing is, he's the front runner for the Republicans for the candidacy of presidency, and that's where it gets really, really scary. Because it was, as many people have pointed out before, this started out as a novelty.
It really did.
Nobody thought he would stand a chance.
I don't think he even thought he was going to follow it through till the end.
Right.
And then, you know, it's great to win. He's winning, Bill.
He is winning. The statement's been made. I mean, everybody says we're not happy with the way government is treating us. So the way we're going to rebel is we're going to take an outsider. And I guess he is an outsider. But
in more ways than one.
I know.
But he has a good heart.
I'm going to use this very quick, easy example. And it's one you already know because I told you this in the office before. John Oliver says that Donald Trump has made the statement that John Oliver's show has asked him four or five times to come on the air with him. And then John Oliver points out that not only has he never asked Donald Trump to be on the show, but he went through the offices and said to everybody else, has anybody ever made an overture to Donald Trump to be on the show? And the answer is no. They've never asked Donald Trump even once to be on the show. But in Trump's version of the story, he's been asked four or five times and he doesn't want to do the show. But
I don't even really know who that guy is.
Right.
I would never do that show.
But how representative.
He wasn't invited, Rihanna's panties.
Right. How representative of that is Donald Trump? To where just because he says something, the way he plays it as it must be true, I'm saying it. I'm Donald Trump. I'm saying it. That equals truth. But it doesn't.
You just said it right there. You said according to Trump.
Right.
And according to Trump, everything's true. But when you try and find out the roots behind it, it's not true. But people hear it and believe it.
When you're running a business that has your name all over it and you're sitting at the big chair at the big table, everybody's paid to nod and go, yes, sir, Mr. Trump. If you say it, it must be true. This is your company. This is your world. Okay. But now the presidency of the United States is the most important job on the planet. You can't do that when you're doing the most important job of the planet. You can do it when it's your own company because it's your company. The world isn't his company.
But he can do it. We've thought you shouldn't and couldn't do it, but he's doing it. And it ended because his name is Drumpf, And so if you'd like to join the Twitter campaign, you can do hashtag make Donald Drumpf again, D-R-U-M-P-F. Also, DonaldDrumpf.com was purchased by John Oliver, so there's more factual information there. We have a lot of calls. Have to take a quick break. 312-981-7200. Whether you support Trump or not, just watch this video. That's all we ask. It's on our Facebook page. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We're talking Donald Trump. I know there are a lot of Donald Trump supporters out there. Just watch this video from John Oliver, his rant. It's 21 minutes. It's on our Facebook page. It's enlightening.
It's well crafted. I mean, it's for the most part, there were very few stories or chapters in there that I hadn't already heard of. But when you see them piled high like that, you realize this is more than just a trend. You know?
I had not heard the ISIS takedown go after their family.
Oh, yeah.
That's despicable. And even joking, you don't joke about. What if somebody from another country is watching this that's in power?
He shocked the people on the Fox News Network.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's not easy to do. All three of them, their mouths are gaping open as he explains that the way he would handle ISIS is by going after their family. You see all three of the members of the Fox and Friends team with their mouths open like, wow, you know.
I want to know what their comeback was, because John Oliver was like, really, you're going to, that's a war crime.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hi, Bill and Wendy.
Hi. What's up, Bill?
Hey, great stuff you just put on there. You know, you don't have a chance once in a while to hear this kind of stuff. But as I was listening, you know, the thought crossed my mind is that I just recently, maybe you may want to think about how you handle this in the interest of balanced reporting, that there's a thing on YouTube about Hillary Clinton, 13 minutes of lying by Hillary Clinton, which kind of rings of the same tone of what you guys played about Trump. So it's, you know, in the interest of trying to get a balanced exposure on this stuff so a voter can make up his mind, I was just wondering whether or not that might be helpful.
I'll take a look at it. Tell me where you saw it. It's on YouTube.
What's I have it.
You have it already?
I think it was something about Clinton.
It's titled Hillary Clinton Lying for 13 Minutes Straight. But now, I don't know who posted this, and I was talking to Bill off the air.
I think there's a guy. I saw it. I thought there was a guy. There was a subline on it as to who.
Michael Armstrong, but I don't know who that is.
Maybe you got to look up Michael Armstrong. He may be trending. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Things. As long as we're on social media, we're all trending these days. So.
Bill, I know what you're going for. And
yeah, it's just an attempt because I'm sitting here and I don't know who I'm going to vote for.
I know. It's come to that.
An elite politician or a businessman. It's a tough one.
Bill, do you, like some of us, myself included, do you just assume if you're in politics, lying is part of the game? I hate to say that, but that's the way I feel.
Well, lying, that's what's been thrown out, which is really is what's happened this year, is that, you know, it's now lying. Before it was, you know, he doesn't answer the question, he's dodging, he's running around, he's never answers the question, so... I mean, that's how we perceive politicians. They're trying to say the right thing at all times so they're not criticized. You know, now with the media and the intensity, it's, you know, if he gets caught, you know, slip a tongue, he's lying. And so, yeah, I would say that that's what we all have to look out for. You just ran a thing on Trump about him lying and not being checking his stuff. Same side on the politicians. It makes it tough. It makes it tough to make a decision. So I appreciate your guys' efforts to try to get some of this stuff out there and get it balanced. But
Bill, I'll watch.
You know, I've been around for a while, a few elections, and I could sit there and say, hey, that guy's giving us a line of BS. But
we'll look into this during the commercial break.
I'll definitely watch it. I'll watch the whole thing later on after the show.
Well, we
I
should
see
watch it.
It
now and maybe play some of that too, because it is Super Tuesday.
All right. Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, Bill. We could put a link to this, too, but I would like to watch it first because we were talking off the air about Michael Moore. I saw that Fahrenheit 9/11. I enjoyed the movie, and there are people, Bush supporters, who said, you know, oh, it was just, you can edit things. And yes, you can, and that's why you have to consider the source.
Absolutely.
So we'll check this out, and, you know, if we deem it appropriate, we'll put it on our website as well,
all
our
right.
Facebook page.
All right. A quick break, Steve with the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. I feel how I
How about the goosebumps I get from hearing that?
This is quite a moment on Sunday night. If you didn't happen to see the 88th Annual Academy Awards, Lady Gaga really took a song and turned it into something a whole lot more. She didn't just sing the song. She acted out the song. It was beautiful. She was joined on stage by 50 sexual assault survivors. The song is called Till It Happens to You. It's from a documentary about campus rape called The Hunting Ground. One of those survivors joins us right now. Kevin Cantor is on the line. Kevin is a slam poet who, as I mentioned, is one of the 50 survivors that joined Lady Gaga on stage. Kevin, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks. I'm happy to be on with you.
As happy as you were being on stage with Lady Gaga, because that's a pretty cool thing.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. I felt so grateful and privileged to be able to share that moment with all of those survivors and her as well. I'm still kind of reeling from it.
And to watch the audience and their reaction to it and all the people watching at home, it was just such a touching, touching moment. What did it say on your arm?
We believe you. Because I think that was something that I chose because for me and my experiences, I just felt like a lot of the rhetoric surrounding my assault and the feedback I got was incredibly invalidating and silencing. And it's also the title of a survivor's anthology that I am a part of that's coming out this April, We Believe You. So that was a message that spoke very strongly to me and what I wanted to display.
Kevin, I don't know. I know for everybody who goes through this, reliving it is something that you almost can't help. And I'm not going to ask you to relive it. And all I'm going to ask is, without giving away too much or too little, what happened?
What you're comfortable saying.
Yeah, whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, no, I mean, all of us, the 51 of us, Gaga included, of course, have very unique experiences. But in my case, I have gone relatively public with my story through my art and through my poetry. So it's kind of in my wheelhouse in regards to talking about my experience. But so I was attacked in college by an acquaintance and really remained silent about it for a very long time, told very few people. But I was involved in and still am the spoken word poetry community. And I actually, years after my attack, saw my attacker under the People You May Know section on Facebook.
What?
And kind of re-traumatized by the experience, and immediately turned to poetry as a means to kind of work through that and unpack that experience and trauma. And that is how I ended up going public with my experience and my story, was through a poem I wrote based on that experience.
And of course, Facebook, you know, you guys, did you attend the same school? You obviously had similar friends, and that's why Facebook said people.
We did not attend the same school, actually, but we did run in the same social circles.
I mean, it's not Facebook's fault, but still, oh my God, when you saw that.
No,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shows like how the internet has made the world smaller, and in some ways, of course, good ways, but of course, it has this, we're heavily saturated in just connection, whether for good or for bad.
Kevin, those words you chose on your arm Sunday night, we believe you, was that an issue in your case where when you finally did tell people what happened, were people not believing you?
Yeah, I mean, I ended up not, personally, I did not report my attack because of the issues I saw moving forward in regards to just the way in which the legal system really works to re-traumatize survivors and put them in the position to be their own strongest advocates at a time when they may not have that strength or that ability. And I remember being left alone in a room with two male officers after my attack, being awfully tacit. And, you know, the rhetoric that was being thrown around by these two police officers was that if I didn't help them, that they couldn't help me, that immediately all of this responsibility was being placed on me. And all I wanted to do was try to start sorting things out for myself. You know, I was told again and again that this was something that couldn't happen to male identifying survivors because, of course, someone like me could have or should have fought back. I mean, all survivors, men, women, you know, gender nonconforming, trans individuals, we're all invalidated and silenced in unique ways.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 20.
All right. You're 22 now?
I'm 23 now.
23 now. Because I'm thinking, you know, if this happened years ago, maybe police officers didn't really know how to lend a sympathetic ear to someone that this just happened to. But you'd think just 2 years ago, it's trauma what you went through to begin with. And then to explain to someone, it just upsets you all over again. And to think for a moment you're being blamed for it. I don't get that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pervasive rape culture that we have in this country. I mean, that works to, you know, silence and invalidate and sexualize women survivors and completely ignore the issue in regards to male identifying survivors and anyone that, you know, is an outlier in any way. I mean, it's something that we don't want to talk about. So I think that just being able to stand on that platform and lend visibility just by standing there and existing is an incredibly powerful act and something that I was very humbled to share with all of those incredible people. I was, of course, taken to be able to meet Gaga and hear her story and have her share that with us. But really, at the end of the day, I see all of those other survivors just as much as rock stars as she is.
Yeah. Kevin, we hear stories about colleges that do their best to cover up stories like this. They don't want their name mm-hmm. to be sullied. Was that an issue at all in your case?
At the end of the day, because I was aware of those other cases, I never even came forward in regards to any sort of administration because of that fear. And I think that for a lot of people, yeah, they end up not even really getting to that point because we are so cognizant and aware of the fact that these cases are so vehemently mishandled. So I never even approached the administrative level in regards to my campus.
Do you stand by that today? I mean, I know this. I know how personal this must be, but I keep hearing we Wendy and I have talked to people who say the important thing is you got to report this. Don't let somebody who ruins your life or tries to ruin your life do that. Report them. I know it's been 2 or 3 years, but when you look back on it, do you think that was the right move or not?
That is not necessarily a belief I hold, only because I believe that no responsibility should be put on the survivor to do anything other than do what they believe is best for themselves.
Yeah.
I think that now as someone who's gone public with my experience, I'm very passionate about creating change around the way in which we handle sexual violence, really working towards shifting the culture. But at the end of the day, as an advocate for survivors, my main hope and goal is so that all survivors know that their only responsibility they have is to themselves to do what they think is best for them. And if that means reporting or not reporting or sharing or not sharing or going through the legal system or finding counseling or using the support system that they have formed themselves, whatever that means for them, whatever survivorship means for them, that is what they should be doing.
So that's your advice to someone who has been assaulted. It just depends on the moment. Have you come forward? And you said Facebook suggested this as someone you might know. Did you mm-hmm. ever come forward and press charges? Have you ever confronted your assaulter?
I did not. I mean, the way in which I have been able to work through and unpack the trauma that I've experienced was through my work as an activist and as an advocate for survivors. I knew for me that going through the legal system and doing depositions and all of those things were not going. I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it out of that. It would have been re-triggering and re-traumatizing in a way that I couldn't. I could not cope with, especially, and that's really because of the way that the system is designed to place all this responsibility on the survivor. So instead, I feel like it's become one of my many missions to be more of an advocate for survivors and just mental health, and doing so through my arts activism.
Kevin, on Sunday night, Wendy wasn't at the Academy Awards, and I wasn't at the Academy Awards, but you could feel the emotion through the screen.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like being on stage as you guys were not just performing the song, but the reaction afterwards?
It was empowering and validating. I mean, for a lot of people on that stage, like I said, I have gone public in with my story. For a lot of people on stage, that was in a way, many of them were involved in the film, right? But just to stand there and exist and be validated by this audience and that industry and have that visibility was incredibly empowering. I mean, we all were standing backstage during the first few verses, just holding hands and breathing together and sharing that energy and kind of just taking in that moment that we were all existing loudly and defiantly together and that there was no way that we were going to be silenced that night.
No, because the power through all 50 of you and Lady Gaga was evident from just sitting in my living room watching it. It really was. Did you think for a minute, Kevin, that maybe the person who assaulted you was watching? Did it give you some validation to show, hey, I'm standing up to this. I'm on stage with Gaga. What are you doing?
You know, at the end of the day, I don't reframe any of my experiences through the lens of my attacker. It's not something that I want to do. I mean, it's trauma is not something that I believe we get over. It's something that we live with and continue to work through and surmount. But I'm not going to give any part of my experiences to that person anymore. That part of it, of this experience has passed me. So now it's going to be about me and other survivors and not about my attacker.
You won, Kevin. You know that?
Thank you.
You did.
And so did all of them. And I hope that other survivors feel the same way, having watched it, that they were seen and heard and validated.
You know, I was thinking when they announced the winner, and it was Sam Smith who won for Writings on the Wall from James Bond. And I know the song didn't win that you were a part of, but the statement was made and the reaction was so strong. So like Wendy said, you did win.
Yeah, we really all felt like we won the night, and hopefully, it's in ways a landmark or cornerstone, and people were listening in a way in which they actually want to go out and make positive change. You know, get online and sign the It's On Us pledge, and really start to be more proactive in counteracting rape culture.
Sure.
Yeah.
Joe Biden came out and talked to us about It's On Us, and you can go to itsonus.org to stop sexual assault. Good for you. You're moving on. You're surviving. And as we mentioned, you won, Kevin Cantner.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Kevin, thanks for being here. Oh, go on.
And
Wendy,
your website for people who want to see some of your slam poetry.
Yeah, you can find me at kevincantorpoetry@gmail.com, and my book, Endowing Vegetables, Too Much Meaning, is on Amazon.
Excellent. Kevin,
we believe
thanks.
You.
We do believe you.
Thank you. All right. I believe everyone else.
thank you. That's Kevin Cantner, everybody. A quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
That was very touching.
Wasn't it? It really was. And I was as I was watching it, you know, you just see these 50 people up there united, and you just go, what a terrible, terrible ordeal each of the 50 have been through, and we don't really know their stories. And there have been one or two websites that have gone in and talked to those people and found out what their stories are. And, yeah, Kevin was one of the guys that we read about and said we should talk to, and we did, so...
And there's someone else who was up on stage till it happens with Lady Gaga for Till It Happens to You, the original song for The Hunting Ground, a documentary, as Bill mentioned, about campus rape. There is a Lifeway Foods CEO from Chicago named Julie Smolianski. She was among one of the survivors on stage as well. And Smolianski was an executive producer for that Hunting Ground documentary. So she was up on stage. It was so touching to see what they had written on their arms and how they get through that and what phrase or series of words will help them be strong.
Right.
And the We Believe You from Kevin Cantner is just so amazingly touching.
Yeah.
You don't hear of men getting raped that much. So there weren't very many men on stage.
No, it was a small percentage, but... certainly good that they were included in this. And, yeah, it really was. I mean, I've been watching the Academy Awards since I was a little kid. It was one of the most unforgettable moments, just so moving. And like we said earlier, they cut to the audience, and you just saw all these Hollywood A-list stars just, you know, crying openly at what was going on. And it, you know, it was just, it was a beautiful moment.
It was so
sad,
touching,
but beautiful.
Yeah. And so powerful, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And you can go to itsonus.org to stop sexual assault. You can take the pledge, watch the videos, contact them, donate resources there. If you've experienced sexual assault, visit notalone.gov for resources, but also join the initiative It's On Us at itsonus.org.
All right. We have a contest winner to announce, correct?
A couple.
A few of them.
This a grand prize and some runner-ups. And this is pretty exciting. We want to thank everyone who submitted their photos online for the Freezer Breeze contest that we were having. A Freezer Breeze to Fort Lauderdale. That's what we were trying to help you with.
We are all more than ready for summer, it says right here, after seeing the pictures of all of you camping and kayaking.
And the snow out the window.
Yeah. Some of you were swimming. Some of you were laying out at the beach, which is an interesting move on your half, but it just shows how badly you want to go to Fort Lauderdale. Some of you were sipping umbrella drinks. Of course, we love the photos of those of you who went outside in all your swimsuits and you played in the snow. You're very brave people.
I think there was someone who wore a bikini and did a snow angel.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Can we announce the runners up first and build up some suspense
yes,
as to who the winner
I
is?
I like the way you think, Bill.
All right. Here's what you win if you are one of the two runner ups. You will freeze here in Chicago, but the good news is you get a 2-night just chillin' package at the beautiful Palmer House Hilton Hotel. The first runner up winner going to the Palmer House Hilton is Kelly Jacobs of Mundelein. Congratulations, Kelly Jacobs of Mundelein.
Not a bad little runner-up prize.
Not bad. Let me give the other runner-up, and then you can do the big winner. Catherine Dunlap of Plainfield, Illinois, is our second runner-up. You will also be receiving a 2-night Just Chillin' package at the Palmer House Hilton Hotel. Wendy, take it away.
All right, so this is what you were going for. You wanted to go to Fort Lauderdale, a trip for two with all the trimmins, and both Bill and I are happy to congratulate
our drummer, Buddy Rich. You froze just like the Just Chillin' package. You froze. I watched you freeze.
That was, oh, God.
That was so telling.
That was the longest drum roll I've ever
heard.
That
was a long drum roll.
It was a solo.
It's a long solo drum
roll. Solo. All right. Holly Schaefroth. Holly Schaefroth of Kankakee. You are off, baby. You and a guest to Fort Lauderdale, the absolute grand prize winner of the Freeze or Breeze to Fort Lauderdale contest. Again, we want to thank everybody who entered, and it was a pretty easy contest. You just sent in a picture, and there's your grand prize winner. So congratulations once again to Holly Schaefroth of Kankakee, who gets to breeze away to Fort Lauderdale trip for two.
We're going to take a quick break. We got some news from Steve, and then we'll check in with Ryan Burrow. He's in Florida right now, as a matter of fact, because he won our contest last year.
Well, maybe Kelly or Holly Schaefroth can go visit Ryan Burrow.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That's a prize.
That's a good prize. All right, take a break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Is this the Ryan Burrow theme song?
This is from the Ryan Burrow Experience, a multimedia presentation that Ryan does at the Park West from time to time. He joins us right now by way of telephone, where he is in Florida, Miami, Florida. It's Super Tuesday. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Hi. 78 degrees, sunny
oh,
here.
Shut
hang up.
Up.
Hang up on Ryan Burrow. Hang up on Ryan Burrow.
I hung up on him. You told
it's
me to hang up on him.
I know. It's snowing.
He sounded good, didn't he? That was one of the better reports I've ever heard from Ryan.
It's snowing outside. The wind chill factor is 10. And he's bathing in a tub of pina coladas. He's
oh,
rubbing
no.
it in.
Oh, no. He is an ABC News correspondent, and we got the call through ABC, so we can't call him back.
Wow,
you
nice
told
work.
Me to hang up on him.
I can't believe you did that, Wendy.
Well, you told me to.
I was being metaphoric.
I listened to you once in a blue moon.
You shouldn't
moon,
listen
and
to me when I'm metaphoric.
Day.
That never works good.
I'm sorry. I thought no, we could just call him back.
No, he's got to answer to his bosses. They want to know why WGN
is
hung up on him.
Right. Don't all take right. the call, Kevin. If Ryan Burrow calls back, do not take the call.
Is this him? Ryan, I'm sorry. Bill hung up on you.
What the heck, man? Because I said 78.
Hang up on Ryan Burrow. Hang up on Ryan Burrow.
I'm not listening to you this time. Yes, that is why. It's not so super here, okay?
Ryan, I don't know if you noticed, but...
No, if it makes you...
you're in the state of Florida, and Super Tuesday does not include Florida. So something wrong happened. Why are you in Florida?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, it's really interesting. There are three candidates in Florida today. You've got Jeb Bush. Well, he's probably here, but no, I take that back. It's Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, as well as Hillary Clinton, and there's a big reason for it. First of all, they can't be in 12 states at one time, obviously. That campaign time is essentially over. But, you know, they are really trying to lock down those early votes. We started with the early voting yesterday in Illinois. They did the same thing here in Florida. And I can tell you, I went to a polling station here, and it was about 6 to 10 people deep consistently.
So, wow.
You know, they are trying to lock down these early votes, even 2 weeks ahead of the primary here. But, hey, you know what? I'm not going to complain about it. It's good work.
Right. Right. Now, Ryan, you say that the candidates can't be in 12 places at one time, but let me say a word to you that you're going to hear a lot, Trump bots.
Oh, and my those God, are robots, don't even say that.
Those are robots that have been created in the image of Donald Trump, and they can be in 12 places at one time.
And are they all huge?
They're all huge.
And they're all going to have that sour face like he just ate a Super Sour Patch Kid.
Yep.
He's always got that sour face on. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I don't think he's going to have that sour face after today. He's looking pretty good in most of the polling here, as well as Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. It's going to be interesting with Mrs. Clinton because you know, she's doing very, very well, polling at least very, very well in the southern states. So you've got Texas, Tennessee, Arkansas, Georgia, Alabama, Virginia as well. And if she can show big gains in those southern states and then keep it close in the northern states of Massachusetts, Minnesota, as well as Vermont, she could have a very, very good evening. And that's not to say that she will be the outright nominee, but she could elbow her way to a good, you know, 100 delegate spread coming out of tonight. And that would put her in very good condition going into Illinois and Florida coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Ryan, so, go on, Steve.
Well, I'm just wondering if Ryan will cover the Illinois primary from Hawaii.
Sure. Why not? Ryan, a week
right next to you, Steve, the whole time.
A week or 10 days ago, there was so much heat going Bernie Sanders' way. There was so much interest. What went wrong? I mean, I know it's too early to tell because we don't have any of the polling numbers yet from today, but all the heat that was there a week and a half ago just seems to have evaporated. Why?
Look, it's a game of numbers, and it gets messy at times, and this one plays very, very well to Hillary Clinton, just her strengths, big minority populations in Texas and Virginia, something she does very, very well. And now, Bernie Sanders will probably pick off a few states tonight, including his own home state of Vermont. We'll see what happens in Massachusetts, and Minnesota and Colorado are always question mark. So we'll see. He could very well pick some of those up. But I mean, the fact that Texas alone has 251 delegates, you know, if Hillary Clinton has a big night there, you know, that speaks volumes to where she's going to be at the end of the night. So, you know, as far as the map goes, very favorable to her right now. And, you know, Bernie Sanders, if he can wait it out and he can wait for the Great Lakes states and the northeastern states to vote, you know, maybe he has a chance. But, you know, unfortunately, the clock could be ticking. But we'll see. I mean, we've been surprised this election cycle. Who knows?
This, according to Google.com, as of 2:15, 1 minute ago, you need 1,237 delegates won for nomination, and Trump has 82 right now, followed by Cruz with 17, Rubio 16, Kasich at 6, and Ben Carson with 4. As of moments ago, delegates won. Trump is at 82.
We might see some of the candidates on the Republican side bow out. I don't know. We'll see kind of how that shakes out. I mean, obviously, Dr. Ben Carson, you know, has been questionable for the last few weeks as to whether or not he's going to be able to maintain his campaign. Governor Kasich has really kind of tried to make the Midwest, the upper Midwest, his stronghold. So once Michigan comes into play next week, he's hoping to make his stand. And Marco Rubio still has yet to win a state. You know, he's hoping that Florida is his place to do that. But I don't know if you guys remember when Rudy Giuliani tried to do that. You know, he said, I'm focusing on Florida. and that just didn't work out for his campaign. So, you know, these guys, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, obviously John Kasich, all need to come up with some kind of win here coming out of Super Tuesday.
Right.
I got to run, guys, but it's good talking to you. I'll give you a weather update later.
How's Thank that? You, Ryan.
Thanks.
We
we'll hang up on
that.
You later, too.
Steve, just gonna
what
say,
were you going to say?
Well, Ted Cruz
Thank you, Ryan.
Is in Texas today, and he said, look, any candidate who can't win his home state has real problems, which, you know, everyone has said that Cruz has got to win Texas
sure.
at least tonight.
Yeah.
The fact that he's saying that indicates to me he's got a pretty good feeling about it.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
think.
I don't think you'd be saying, I'm doomed if I lose, if you thought there was any chance you're going to lose.
Steve, another example, and we've been talking about this for months, the way Donald Trump just has this way of saying or doing anything and it doesn't hurt him. When it was first announced, as of Sunday, you know, when they asked him about David Duke and the white supremacists backing him, and he didn't handle it very well, that's not even going to make a dent today, is it?
No, it probably won't today, but the experts are saying it will have an impact likely in the general election.
Oh, all right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We have more stuff for you. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Can I ask you guys a question?
All right,
so you have Bill Clinton, who's president, right? And then he's
no
not
longer,
president
right,
anymore.
Right.
And now his wife is running for president.
True.
And Chelsea Clinton would be the first daughter two times.
If
Hillary wins.
The first child who's had two parents as president, yeah.
Should be the first daughter two separate times. Because one as her father was president and one as her mother was president.
Yeah, but like there have been other presidents. Like didn't Grover Cleveland have a...
Can you say his name?
I cannot say the name Grover Cleveland. I think he had some children, so they were president more than once.
But I mean from two different parents,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I was confused. Well, here is my question to you and to Steve. If you got the top job at WGN.
Yes.
Okay, top job ever.
Yes.
And then you didn't want it anymore or you left for some reason and then your wife got the job.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? I mean, isn't the president of the United States like the most glorified position? It's the highest position. It's the one people talk about the most. And then you're president mm-hmm. as a guy, and then you're not president anymore, and now all of a sudden your wife is president.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that bother you?
No, I'd be all right with it. I'd be fine with it.
I was thinking about that on the way in. I just don't. It's just, I wish Bill Clinton had never been in the White House, although he was a pretty good president. But it's just, it seems funny to put someone's wife then in the presidency.
Do you think this is helping her or hurting her?
Hurting her.
Do you think it's hurting her? Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Is anyone else like bothered by that? Is anyone, any man going to want to admit that? I just think it's kind of like, how does Bill Clinton feel about this? Like, yeah, I was president of the United States and, ooh, look who's
now
in the White House
is.
Now.
I've heard people say that if you're voting for Hillary Clinton, you're essentially voting for both of them, and I don't know that that's true.
Well, that got them in trouble 16 years ago.
Yeah, she is not going to let him do anything.
I don't think so.
What's more bothersome.
I think she'll let him be some sort of advisor in some respect.
Yeah, but she's going to do like this is her job to prove now as the first female president if she wins.
Right.
That you know,
it's coming from her and
it's
not from
me.
Him. Yeah.
You know, maybe she's saying it to him and then to get back at him for the whole Monica Lewinsky thing, she's going to go, "Nope, I'm not taking any of your advice." It's
really
kind of weird.
Well, I don't think though that I mean she's has such a record on her own and so many, you know, things
she's
that
experienced.
She can point to. She's not, I mean, I think when you think of who is Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton's wife is three or four down.
Agreed.
It's become that.
Agree.
It has.
I know. But to him, I just want to know what he feels about it. Is it cool for him that, yeah, I'm getting back in the White House again?
Well, I mean, if your husband had great success, you'd be happy for him, right?
I would be. But then if he lost that success and I got it, I think he'd be mad.
Mad is it? Would
not
he be
mad? But it's just—it seems like a very strange situation.
Oh, it is. You can't even debate it. It is a strange situation because it's such a select group of people that have ever been president or even been close to being president.
So just the mere fact that it's two people who are married to each other, and one was and one could be, just the mere fact that she's a woman, that's never happened before. So you tack on the fact that not only is she a woman, but she also happened to be married to a guy who was once the president. That makes it even crazier.
That's what I'm saying. It's right. Just a whole weird situation.
Right.
And Joe, I guess there is some similarity here.
Yeah, this would bother me as much as the son of a president becoming president. But then again, we're from Chicago, so I'm used to that. The son of a mayor became mayor.
Right. So,
but yeah, if Jeb Bush had any chance in this whatsoever, it would be, you know, daddy, son, son.
Right. Yeah, his dad and brother.
His modern day royalty is what it amounts to.
It is kind of, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. Because, I mean, if you go back in our lifetimes, John F. Kennedy obviously was the president, but then there was aspirations there with two different brothers to also be the president. And then I remember when I was a kid, people said, you know, his son John had so much charisma. They go, so, you know, and someday he could be the president. Didn't play out that way, sadly, because of the airplane accident. But I remember when I was a kid, people go, that guy would make a president at some point. So some families just seem to have it in their bloodline. Not a lot of families, but the Bushes, the Clintons, to some extent, the Kennedys.
I just think, you know, if my husband was president of Trump Tower, let's just say.
Yeah.
And he lost his job or left his job, and then I just think that's a weird dynamic. I know women should be treated as equals, and I know a woman can do a job as well as a man can do a job, but I just want to know how Bill Clinton thinks about this.
We've had a couple of instances. Steve, remind me if I'm right on these. I think I am on at least two of these, where politicians that couldn't finish out their term were replaced by their spouses.
It's
Sonny Bono was
almost,
one.
Yeah.
Hubert Humphrey was one, right? Didn't Hubert Humphrey's wife?
But they died, right?
They died.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton ain't dead.
Far from it.
I'm just resting. Kicking.
Right.
I can't do a Bill Clinton.
Right.
But can we discuss this after the news? Because maybe
absolutely.
I'm not phrasing it correctly. But I was thinking about it on the way in, and it's just like, okay, Bill Clinton was president, one of the coveted positions of the whole world, of the United States anyway.
Yeah.
And then, I did it. I was president. And it's like, oh, damn, she's going to be president now. I just think that would be a weird dynamic.
All right, sure. We can discuss that. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Some news from Steve, and then your calls, your texts, and your thoughts at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I was driving in this morning, Bill, and I was thinking, you know, it's such a weird dynamic. Bill Clinton was president. He was in the White House.
Right.
I know he wasn't fired. He left after his term.
Mm-hmm. He was impeached, but he didn't leave.
Yeah, but you know what? That's a whole other thing that I don't understand.
Yeah.
Impeached.
You're supposed to leave when you're impeached.
One would think.
He did
was
not
this
leave.
A civil case?
So rude.
But so he's president, and that's just something that, you know, I'm sure George W. walks around going, well, that's Ross Perot, and he wasn't president. But he walks around and, you know, well, I was president of the United States. And then
he doesn't do that often, though, do you think? People either know or they don't know, but more people know, so he doesn't have to.
It just seems weird that, you know, a guy who's going to go, I was so was my wife. That's just weird to me.
Yeah, all right. I'm all right with it. I would love to see my wife be the president.
I'd love to see her be president,
That'd be
too.
Fun to watch.
Although, boy, you would have toy collections all over the White House.
Yes, I would.
It would never be the same again.
No.
Hi there, Dan. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you? Good afternoon.
Greetings.
Dan, are you as weirded out by this as Wendy is? Because she is very upset. She doesn't see
Somebody wants to know if I'm smoking weed on the way in. No, I just, it just hit me as peculiar.
No, my first thought is if Bill Clinton was able to manage his extracurricular activities when he was president, what is Hillary going to have to worry about when he's first president?
Ah,
he's going to have more free time.
Yes. Yes.
He's going to be like, don't worry, she's too busy to worry about us.
Maybe Hillary's just doing this to get back at him, and one of the mail pages might come visit her in the Oval Office.
The Oval Office.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of things going on in the White House if that happens.
Party time. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Steve, is Steve Bertrand within the call of our voice? Steve, realistically, let's say Hillary Clinton becomes the next president of the United States.
Yeah.
Is there a cabinet position? Is he an ambassador? You have Bill Clinton at your disposal.
He's the first lady.
Well, I think
you do something with him, though, don't you?
Sure. I mean, look what they've been doing with him in the campaign. They've been using his popularity and his, you know, communications ability, and I'm sure he would become an advisor, just as Barbara Bush was an advisor to George Bush. And,
yeah.
I'm sure Michelle Obama is to Barack Obama, but he's got more government experience, and he's been there, you know, been through it all.
But with all the examples you just gave, it wasn't a full position. It was just an implied position,
so
right?
So are you saying would they give him a title, something like
Do you
that?
Think?
She could.
Right?
It's just weird.
Yeah, I think he'd just be the first husband. I mean, remember, too, it's the first time ever.
Yeah, right.
So they would sort of be defining the role.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe, but I would think not. Because, you know, she also wants to make this her presidency.
Right.
And if he's got too much of a title and is too upfront when it comes to actually governing, that takes away from her the view of her authority.
Oh, I guess.
Which wouldn't serve.
But see, I think 847, in an effort to insult me, has made my point clearer. 847 says, how about a woman is running for president, not someone's wife? But I can't get past the fact that it's his wife. I'm not saying I'm not voting for her because of this. But I'm just saying, it's something that is just very unusual.
Well, it is. It's never happened before.
And
it is unusual.
Telling you my feelings. I've been told to tell my feelings more.
Well, it's working.
Lucy, tell me your feelings.
Well, my thought when this all happened with Monica, I thought, he owes me big time. You shut up and listen. I'm going to do my thing and you owe me. That's how I feel about it.
Be honest with me, Lucy. Are you surprised that the Clintons are still married?
Yes, I am. But when it happened and she stayed with him, I said, you know what? She's got to have made a deal with him. You shut up. I'm going for it. And you behave yourself. Otherwise, you owe me big time.
Interesting.
See, but I feel she should have left him for that.
I know. We all think so.
But wouldn't that have helped her more to show, I am not going to put up with this crap? See, I'm confused as to why she even stayed with him.
Yeah.
I am too. Really, I am too. But maybe that's their power thing going on.
Interesting. Thank you,
Lucy. I like your theory. Thank you. And remember I said, you know, Bill would be the first lady. But that's not really true. But, Tom, what would he be?
No, Bill Clinton would be the first ladies' man.
Cavassier.
He already is. I think he's already gotten that title.
Thank you, Tom.
If you go back to when the Clinton, can we say, it's safe to say scandal happened, right?
Oh,
is
it was
the
a scandal.
Scandal?
All
right. Which one?
Well,
the
Monica Lewinsky one. Let's go with that one.
Devil with the red dress. Red
All right.
dress.
So
Blue
at
dress.
The time, people were so divided over... is she a stronger person for staying with him, or would she be a stronger person for saying, I don't need this, I'm out of here? And it was, for the people I talked to, it seemed to be an almost 50-50 split, didn't it, for you? Some people seem to enjoy the fact that she could somehow forgive and forget.
While everyone I spoke to was shocked she was staying with her.
I swear to you, I was sure, even though they put on, you know, a nice face for the camera, I thought to myself, a year after he's not president, there's no way in the world they're still married. But they are still married. And they seem, and I could be wrong, they seem happier now than...
They do.
Don't they?
Honestly. I totally agree with you, but there's just a weird competition thing going on.
Hmm.
I don't know. Justin, what do you think?
Well, I think if she were to actually become president, I think maybe after their terms are both done, they go about comparing it with each other, going, you know, I did this better in mine than yours, or, you know what, I did better than you did last time.
That's possible. Sure, if you share a similar experience like that with the person you love, it's natural you
but
would do
it.
But
it's the president
know,
of the United States.
It's hyper because it's president.
Yeah, it's not like you're both top executives at WGN Radio. That
yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
But this is a president.
Right, right.
Thank
right.
you, Justin.
Thank
it's
you,
just,
Justin.
It's so
no,
it's
I
so
get
weird.
I get that.
Ted Cruz is the first winner on the Super Tuesday. Just so you know,
is he?
Yeah, I told you earlier there was a lawsuit filed in Cook County Circuit Court saying he shouldn't be on the Illinois ballot because Well, he was born in Canada.
Yeah.
And the judge today disagreed with that and said that he is eligible.
He's welcome on the
to
ballot.
Run in Illinois.
All right. But that's you're not
so
no one's
won,
surprised
he's
by
won
that.
He's won one state so far.
Right. But you're not surprised, right?
No.
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 815, you really think some 20-year-old male page wants Hillary? Ew. Bill was at least a handsome man. And you know what? He really wasn't, but he was charismatic. He was likable.
You didn't find him to be a handsome president, Bill Clinton?
He was all right.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not like...
But everybody says, and I've never been in the same room as Mr. Clinton. Steve, have you? I'm trying to remember if you have or haven't been.
Yeah,
in
a couple times.
Have you?
Sure.
All right. This is what everybody says. I've not talked to you about it, but everybody says when he comes into a room, everybody knows it. There's an electricity about him. Did you sense that? Did you feel that at all around him?
Yeah, I would think so. Absolutely. You know, but you know, I think that's part of being a president because I was never in a room with George Bush, but young George, I was with old George, but they said that young George was that way too.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what you thought of him, when he was in a room with
likeable.
You, he commanded the room.
Huh.
I would have liked to have a beer with him when he was in his drinking days. George W. He just seems fun.
He would have drank you under the table.
I know.
He would have.
But he seemed fun. He did. I like him better now that he's not president.
Yeah.
But, you know, he seemed like a good guy. I don't know. I'm weird. Yes, I have. Somebody wanted to know if my opinion would change if Michelle Obama ran for office. No, it wouldn't change. It's a weird situation. Maybe a couple years down the road.
When more and more presidents
maybe, no.
are married to other presidents.
Well, I guess this has to be the groundbreaking one.
It is.
It's so bizarre to me that, you know, Bush and Clinton, that's what you got to be a president.
Yeah, yeah. For the most part, that's been most of the last couple of decades.
They should rule out family members.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's constitutional.
I know you can't, but it is.
Ted, you can run, but your wife, you know, or no family members.
Jeb wishes somebody would have told them that now.
Right. Would have saved him a lot of money.
Hell yeah. All right. How about this? We'll do a break. We have a little bit more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we're talking about, you know, on Super Tuesday, Donald Trump is, what did Steve Bertrand just say about Ted Cruz?
I was knitting. I didn't hear.
He's not there. But Donald Trump is well on his way, it appears, to be the Republican nominee.
It seems that way, yeah.
And we were talking about if Hillary Clinton gets in office, and I just found it weird that I should think of it as a woman in the office, but I think of it as Bill Clinton's wife in the office.
Above the fact that she's a woman, you think of it as
Yeah,
all right.
So I just had some weird thoughts about it, wondered if men would have a problem with that if you were president first, and then you're done with your term, and then your wife becomes president. And Sheila raises a whole different point. Hi, Sheila. Hi, Sheila.
Hello.
Hi.
What's up, Sheila?
Yeah, I just have two quick points. My theory on why Hillary stayed with Bill, I think she did it just to suit her own political purposes, ambitions for the future.
But would that have hurt her if the Clintons had divorced, do you think that would have been a strike against her somehow?
Somehow I think it would have. I think having him in a position of power gave her a foot in the door.
Hmm. All right.
And then number two, I wouldn't want to sit in the same office where my husband was fooling around. I'd demand a new office.
See, I didn't even think about that. That makes it even weirder.
It's like, okay, I'm done. I'll listen. Bye.
So the first day
Sheila.
In, she would say, could we move the desk over to that side of the room? Or I'm not usually into the feng shui, but is there some way we could just slide the desk way over to that side of the room instead?
He had his feng shui'd.
I said feng shui.
That's what I said. 224, hey, Wendy, stop projecting your relationship on Hillary and Bill Clinton's relationship. If you think it'll be competitive, doesn't mean it will. My relationship's fine, and I don't know if Jim would be upset about it. I just thought it was a weird dynamic.
Well, like I said, it's unprecedented. It is unprecedented. Nothing like this has ever happened before.
How cool would it be for Chelsea if Hillary wins? And that's it. You get to move back into your old room. and redecorate it because she's older now.
Right. Different posters. Well, she's married and has a family of her own now, so I don't know if that'll play, but maybe.
And then, all right, we have Betty White for president, someone just said.
Yes.
269, I used to criticize Hillary for staying with Bill until I thought of all the people I knew who stayed with a cheating spouse. And then 630 says, Wendy is a woman who was cheated on and stayed. I will tell you that she loves him. I could see it in her face, the devastation from the betrayal. Much as I had a plan to keep my family intact, Hillary had a view of their family and their plan. I still have empathy for her. I think they're in love now. I do see it, and they like each other. They like to spend time together now. It didn't appear like that before to me.
Yeah, there it seemed, and
something shifted. Right,
something did shift, didn't it? And we weren't there for it, so we don't know exactly what it was.
No,
but,
and you do what you want in your own situation. That's a very personal issue,
right?
And because I say, hopefully I'm never in that position, because you don't know what you would do until you're in there. It surprised me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we talked about George Bush and we talked about John F. Kennedy, so let's talk about the combination, George and Kennedy. George Kennedy died. I found out last night, you found out just about a half an hour, 45 minutes ago. George Kennedy, for those of you who don't know, was the actor behind all of the airport movies. Airplane are the parody movies. The airport movies, those are the Arthur Haley movies. Very serious air disaster movies. He was always the guy who said, "We're going to get that plane down in one piece." Except the one where they were under the ocean, and he said, "I'm going to get that plane up in one piece." Remember, that was the big twist. He was in Cool Hand Luke. I believe he won the Academy Award for Cool Hand Luke.
That is one of the best movies of all time, and he was great in that.
Yeah, him and
Paul Newman.
Paul Newman and Strother Martin, really good in that. He was in the Top Gun movies. I'm trying to think of what else people would definitely know him from. If you don't know the name, look him up. George Kennedy, you've seen his face 1,000 times. We found out that he just died at the age of 91, and that's too bad because that was really a great actor for a long, long time.
91. You know, I mean, we can only hope we make it to 91.
I know.
I'm hoping I make it to 61.
You're doing okay. You're on par. You're on pace for that.
I beat 51, but 61,
no, you'll make
that's...
it. You'll be all right. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll check in. Rose doing the show from Harry Carey's for the toast to Harry Carey. So we'll find out what's going on there next. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.